It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 509 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for SummerSlam Sunday, August 20th, 2017. I am the Sala Monster, and it has been a very busy weekend so far, fun weekend, and it's not over yet. I had the chance to speak to a bunch of WWE superstars on the red carpet at the 2K18 launch party here in New York City on Friday night. Yesterday, of course, I had the chance to meet a whole bunch of you guys at our official Sound Off meetup at the KBH, King's Beer Hall, only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center, hours before NXT TakeOver, and I did make it to NXT TakeOver. I was in attendance for the show last night, a fantastic show. It would be a rare thing to have a bad TakeOver, because I don't think we ever have had a bad TakeOver, so I have a lot to say about that show. So what we're going to do here, every time I say the show may be a little abbreviated, I still end up going 2 hours. So I don't know how long the show will go today. There will be no mailbag. I did not have time to go through mailbag questions. I haven't even had time to watch Lucha Underground, which for me is, I have to be busy to not make time for Lucha Underground. And I will watch it at some point, but I won't be talking about it here. The interviews that I did at the 2K18 launch party, what I plan on doing is sort of editing them into one video, because I did get video of everything, and I thank Webmaster Mike for that. He tagged along. He was a great help, and I want to thank him for that. So the video will be going up. Again, it's going to take a few days. What I did, though, is I have the audio, not all of the audio, but most of it. I'm going to save some of it for the video. I'm going to play that for you at the end of the show. So I had the chance to talk to Kurt Angle. I had the chance to talk to Braun Strowman, who is in fact a monster of a man in person. I don't think words can adequately describe how big this man is. WWE champion Jinder Mahal, now former NXT champion, unfortunately, Bobby Roode, Bayley, who talked to me a little bit about her injury and the Mae Young Classic, and I asked her about the Horsewomen and a couple of other things. Alexa Bliss. Just a lot of really good stuff. Again, they're not long interviews, but I had the chance to talk to each one of them. I'll play that audio for you at the end of the show where the mailbag normally would be. That'll be a few minutes, so if you want to hear audio from the interviews I did on Friday night, you can wait until the end of the show for that, or you can wait until the video goes up on YouTube if you want to go in fresh and watch the video version of that. But thank you to everybody who came out for that meetup yesterday. You guys killed it. I mean, I had a sense of how many people were going to be coming through the Facebook invite, so I gave the bar a heads up. And big shout-out to the King's Beer Hall and Marquee, who runs the place. I mean, it's a great place. It's just a fun place, very open, very spacious, and it was disgustingly hot and humid here in New York yesterday, and so to be able to go indoors, as opposed to being, let's say, outdoors at a beer garden somewhere, was far better. Just walking from the train stop to the bar, I was drenched in sweat. I probably lost 2 pounds just walking there. But it's a great establishment. The second year in a row now that they've hosted us. I'm almost sure we'll go back and do it again next year since they're coming back. I know SummerSlam is coming back at least one more time to the Barclays Center in 2018. So thank you to everybody who came out. You guys are a bunch of crazy bastards. We got this great group photo shot from up above of most of us. Some people had to leave a little early. So if you did not make it into the shot, I apologize. But I looked at that photo and I said, man, we drew a better crowd than GFW. And you know what? I'm probably not too far off because I know in Staten Island they didn't do all that well. But again, thank you to everybody. It's crazy, I almost forgot about this, but earlier in the week, if you missed it, and you want to show some support for the Sound Off, head on over to podcast1.com. Wade Keller of the Pro Wrestling Torch, and when you think about the wrestling newsletters, you think of two people, really. You think of Meltzer, and you think of Keller, who I think has been running the Torch since 1987, which would be the very first year I can remember being a wrestling fan. He invited me to come onto his Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, which is on podcast1.com, to talk about SmackDown from last Tuesday, the go-home show to SummerSlam. We did over 90 minutes, which is one of the longest shows he's done. It's been very well received, gotten a lot of great feedback, and again, I encourage everybody, if you do listen to it, if you like what you hear, by all means, tweet me, tweet Wade. I think it's at the Wade Keller. Let him know what you think. Will there be more in the future? I don't know, but I want to thank him for inviting me on. It was a lot of fun. Certainly great exposure for the show as well, which is always a good thing. So thank you to Wade for having me on his Podcast One show this past week. One more note, and I promise we'll get into it here after the PayPal stuff. I'm doing another event today. It's not my event. It is Justin Labar's event. He invited me to be part of a Q&A with himself, myself, and JD from New York. So we're doing that today between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. At a little place called 205th, which is only a few blocks away from where I did my meetup yesterday. It's in Park Slope. It's only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center here in Brooklyn. So if you are in the area, I don't have the cross streets in front of me, but you can look it up on Yelp. 205th. I will be there between 4 and 6 p.m. for that Q&A event, and hope to see some of you there. SummerSlam tonight, as I sit here right now, it's kind of up in the air. I don't know if I'm going to SummerSlam or not. We'll wait and see. If not, I'll be watching it from the comfort of my own home, but that's kind of up in the air right now. And I think that covers all that business. Audible, keep supporting us, audibletrial.com/solomonster for the 30-day trial and a free audiobook of your choosing. And if you'd like to support the podcast and make a PayPal donation, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Thank you this week to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, always like hearing from the Lunatic, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, The Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs, The Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, who I met for the very first time at our meetup yesterday. Very cool to meet you both, as well as Michael, actually, who I just mentioned a moment ago. Very cool to meet you as well. Jimmy the Mailman Milstead, who I met at WrestleMania in the past. I think it was WrestleMania this year, in fact, in Orlando. Jimmy's a great guy. Bobby the Wizard Waldrop, Save the World Sean Tilly, the DC Slayer Marcus Cross, Brett Brickfist Brode, Stephen Handyman Halistick, the Show Off Corey Van Dam, Vicious Vincent Cooper, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, the Main Attraction Jackson Scott, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Dark Sky Dixon Krasinski, the Trinidad Tyrant Jeffrey Matthews, who turns 30 today, so happy birthday, Jeff, on the Big 3-0. And Luis, the Belmont Sentinel Alejandro, who wants to give his shout-out this week. I take it here from this email he sent me to Debbie Ryan for being that damn awesome. Okay. Shout-out to Eddie, by the way. Thank you for the shot. Eddie bought me a shot at the meetup yesterday. I didn't even bother to ask what it was. I just sort of, you know, down the hatch. It could have been cyanide for all I know. But it wasn't. I want to thank Eddie for that. Eddie's a certified computer technician. He has a business called The Angry Tech. If you have a virus, if you have hard drive problems, even if you have a cracked phone screen, Eddie's the one you want to hit up. Hit him up on Twitter at TheAngryTech1. That's TheAngryTech and the number one. Facebook.com/TheAngryTech. Or you can call him the old-fashioned way, 347-367-8708. So, again, thank you to Eddie. So, like I said, I did make it to the NXT show last night. I am very, very happy that I did. Just to give you a sense, I don't believe any of the shows this weekend, at least as I record this, were or are sold out. So despite what you may hear on TV, unless it does sell out at the very last second, they are not in fact sold out. I could tell you for a fact that NXT was not. It was mostly packed, but from where I was sitting, which if you know my view was of the aisleway with the ring to the right of me, that side of the arena, the very top section, almost that entire half of the arena, was completely tarped off. And that's a pretty large section of seats to be tarped off. So there was that. But the people who were there were very loud, at least in person they were. I haven't gone back and watched the whole TV version yet. I've only seen bits and pieces, but that gives you a sense as far as attendance. Now, I am going to give some quick spoilers on the TV show coming up this Wednesday. As usual, they tape some stuff to air on NXT this coming week. If you absolutely do not want to know what happened, you can skip ahead by a couple of minutes. I'm just going to run through this real quick. This is what you're going to see on TV this week. No Way Jose came out. He was to have a match, I believe. The planned match was with Lars Sullivan. And No Way Jose came out. He did his little conga line with some fans. And in doing so, Lars ran out in the middle of his entrance, and he viciously attacked No Way Jose, left him laying, and so the match never actually began. We have Peyton Royce with Billy Kay in her corner. Peyton Royce beat Sarah Logan, the former Crazy Mary Dobson, with the Perfect Plex. You know, I keep looking at Billy and Peyton, and I'm just saying there's really nothing left for them to do in NXT, especially so long as Asuka has that championship, because they've already, you know, gone up against Asuka. They've lost, as everybody else has. And I'm kind of surprised, frankly, they're not already on the main roster. You know, I consider myself a Peyton Royce fan, maybe more Peyton Royce than Billy Kay. And I think, you know, they're probably due to be called up very soon. Could be as early as this week. I don't know. But I just don't know what's left for them to do in NXT at this point. And much to my satisfaction, we had the UK contingent. They brought them in for a tag team match. The UK champion Pete Dunne, who I guess was cleared to compete. If you remember, he was supposed to have a match at that Progress show last weekend against Jack Gallagher, and about a day or two before, he suffered an injury at a indie show in Brooklyn, had to have about 11 or 12 stitches put in the side of his eye, and could not compete that night, but he was cleared here. He teamed with my boy Wolfgang, who actually looks a little slimmer than I remember him last time. They took on Tyler Bate and Trent Seven. Pete Dunne, by the way, I mean, they all got very nice ovations in coming out, but Pete Dunne's ovation just blew them all away. As soon as his music hit and the name Pete Dunne popped up on the Titantron, the place went nuts. So this guy, we need to see more of him. I know I made that comment a few weeks ago, but just seeing him here in the reaction, and I know it's Brooklyn, but still, we need to see more of him in the future on TV. There was a UK chant here in Brooklyn that started up early on. There was a This Is Progress chant, which I'm sure meant the world to Smallman and that whole crew there. It was a very fun match. You know, not terribly long, but it was fun for what it was. Tyler went for the Tyler Driver 97 on Pete Dunne, but Wolfgang had gotten the blind tag. So when he went for the pin, the ref said, no. You know, Pete's not the legal man. And then all of a sudden, off the top rope comes Wolfgang with a Swanton bomb for the pin. So Wolfgang and Tyler Dunne. Pete Dunne get the win. Very cool to see the UK guys. Okay, now, let's move on to NXT TakeOver, the Brooklyn portion here. They mentioned that Kurt Angle, and I know they had interviews with each of them, or at least Kurt on the pre-show, Raw GM Kurt Angle and SmackDown GM Daniel Bryan were there to watch the show and, I guess, to scout talent. And I say it's about time they did. It's about damn time. That's one of the things that's been missing, are the two GMs sort of vying for top talent from NXT, working maybe trades the way that GMs in baseball would. That would make things a little more fun, I think, in terms of this brand split. Hopefully this is the start of that. I remember when Nakamura just sort of randomly showed up on SmackDown. He had a great debut with the violinist and all that, but you would think that Kurt Angle would want to go after someone like Nakamura as well. He wouldn't just randomly show up on SmackDown and at least let us in behind the scenes as to what's going on, if there's conversations going on between the two GMs. They really have not done that up to this point. So I thought that was cool. There's rumors, by the way, that as early as this week, you know, tomorrow being Monday or Tuesday, that we might even see some call-ups to the main roster, which I'm going to talk about here in a little bit. First match was Andrade Cien Almas with Zelina Vega against Johnny Gargano. As great as this match was, and it really was, because Gargano can, I think, work with almost anyone. He's one of those guys who can probably go in there and have a good match with an inanimate object if he had to. And he'd probably sell for it like he was concussed. That's like the classic Johnny Gargano sell. His eyes glazed over, right? But I watched this and I thought, man, as great as this match was, imagine the match that he could have had with Tommaso Ciampa in this building. Because you know that was the match that would have happened on this show. And I think it could have gone down as a match of the year contender. But as it was, these two had a tremendous match. I would say either the first or second best match in the entire show. Honestly, it was either this or the women's match. And I think from an in-ring perspective, this match was my number one for the night. Crowd was into it, you know, chants of NXT and this is awesome. And, you know, all the usual chants you would expect from a match like this. Almas at one point had, I guess Gargano, I think had run in and, Almas had sort of, hip tossed him into the corner. And there were a bunch of reversals back and forth, guys going for different things. Gargano did manage to lock in, I guess he calls it the Gargano Escape, which is his submission hold. Place went nuts for it, by the way. They thought that was going to be the finish. I just couldn't bring myself to think that Gargano was winning just because Almas is clearly getting the big push right now. He's got the new valet. You know, it was good. I mean, they kind of almost had me convinced, but I still felt like Andrade was going to win this thing, which, of course, in the end, he did. Anyway, the match continued from there. Almas took off into the opposite corner and hit his running double knees. This was after a deadlift powerbomb. This guy is freakishly strong. I mean, anybody who can do the deadlift powerbomb, we've seen Roman Reigns do it. I mean, it takes a strong-ass dude to pull off a move like that. Granted, Gargano is not a big guy, but still. I don't know that many people listening to this podcast would be able to do something like that. I'm sure some of you could. Remind me not to piss you off. But anyway, deadlift into the corner. Like I said, Andrade hit the running knees. Did not get the pin. Got a near fall out of it. Which, again, I know the hammerlock DDT he's been using as his finish, so I didn't expect that to be the finish. But Gargano did hit a couple of super kicks after that. He hit the lawn dart into the corner, which is always a brutal-looking move. And as Gargano was going for the kill, Zelina Vega tosses a t-shirt, a blue t-shirt, into the ring. I couldn't tell from where I was sitting, but there were people saying that it was a Tommaso Ciampa t-shirt, which is just so perfect. So she throws it at Gargano. It distracts him briefly enough where he gets drop-kicked into the corner, and then Andrade hits the hammerlock DDT for the win. There's this great shot of Gargano sitting disappointed in the ring after the match with a t-shirt laying in front of him. If it was a Tommaso Ciampa shirt, that's too awesome for words. That's just so great. And I love that in some small way they can keep that feud going until Tommaso comes back, even if he isn't back until, you know, March or April of next year. Disappointed that we couldn't get that match, but this one was a very suitable replacement, I would say. Corey Graves came out to a massive reaction. He was introduced as the guest commentator for the Tag Team Championship match between Sanity and the Authors of Pain. It was I thought it was supposed to be Killian Dane and Alexander Wolfe. I think that's what the graphic had said on TV last week, but it was instead Eric Young and Alexander Wolfe with Killian Dane outside the ring. This was weird. This was weird. I enjoyed this match. I thought it was a good match, but it was weird in that you had two heel teams going into this match. That's weird enough. But in the TV leading up to it, the Authors of Pain, for the first time really in their entire run, were made to look vulnerable, and they were laid out by Sanity in such a way that almost made you think that the Authors of Pain were the de facto babyfaces going into this match. Instead, we came here to Brooklyn, and again, it seems like the match was sort of booked to be this way, and it wasn't just the crowd going rogue and cheering for whoever they wanted to cheer for. It was more Sanity who were positioned in this match as the babyfaces. Eric Young, he was sort of the babyface in peril for a good part of the match. He got the hot tag later on to Alexander Wolfe, of all people, and actually got a nice pop for it, too. Match got off to a very quick start. There was a table that had been set up outside the ring, so the table was sort of leaning up against the barricade. And then the match went on. The whole time the table is there. So you know at some point that table is going to come into play. So like I said, Wolfe eventually gets the hot tag, comes in, runs wild. And Nikki Cross goes to get involved in the match. This is after Eric Young had done a dive out to the floor. This is after Alexander Wolfe had done a dive out to the floor. Nikki Cross now wants to get into the party. So there's a pull apart between her and Paul Ellering in the ring, and the referee keeps them apart. Nikki climbs up to the top rope, dives outside the ring, and one of the Authors of Pain, I don't know if it was Akam or Rezar, let's say Akam, probably wrong, but he catches Nikki Cross. Now, he's standing sort of in front of where that table is propped up. Killian Dane from out of nowhere comes charging in and literally just... Now, remember, he's holding Nikki Cross up. Killian Dane comes from out of nowhere and just does a... just a giant charging dive into both of them, and they all go crashing through the table. The closest thing to man-on-woman violence you're ever going to see in WWE. And the place went nuts for it. It was a great spot. So that member of the Authors of Pain, that author of pain, is now out. The other one is rolled back into the ring, and we had the finish of Eric Young and Alexander Wolfe. I wanted to describe it almost as like the demolition finish. You know, one of them basically came off the top rope and gave a neck breaker to the Author of Pain and got the pin. First time that the Authors of Pain have ever been pinned. I believe they were undefeated going into this match. So that's one streak that came to an end last night. Place went crazy. Again, they cheered them like they were baby faces. And, you know, Eric Young has the championship and he's getting all emotional and it turned into a great match, I have to say. I didn't expect a whole lot going into the show when it came to the tag title match, but this was good. And so as they're celebrating, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Saw Bobby Fish the other night at the 2K18 party. No, it was weird because people were sort of floating around, you know, Xavier Woods and other people. And Bobby Fish was sort of in the back by himself, just not being bothered at all. He's just sort of standing there. Well, he was certainly a focal point here on this show. And so he came out with Kyle O'Reilly. They put the boots to Sanity. I think they even put the boots to the Authors of Pain. Bodies everywhere. The former Red Dragon, they picked up the tag team belt and posed with them. I don't know if they're going to call them Red Dragon. I don't see any reason for them not to. I think even on commentary, when I went back and watched the finish of this match, I think Nigel McGuinness referred to their finish, which they did use. I think they used it on Eric Young. They called it Chasing the Dragon. I would imagine they're going to be called Red Dragon, and this is exactly what they should have done. Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, while they're, you know, tremendous wrestlers on their own, and they may have some measure of success on their own, I certainly have no faith if at some point these guys are called up to the main roster that individually they're going to go anywhere. I still feel, even in NXT, that they are far stronger together as a unit than they are individually. And so the fact that they knew that is very reassuring, I should say. And so I'm happy to see them being kept together as a team. It's the right move to make. And I made the comment on Twitter as soon as I saw this. I tweeted out, I said, not sure that this is the last we're going to be seeing of these two for the night. And as it turned out, I was right. Aleister Black and Hideo Itami. They had good old JR, Jim Ross, who had done a show, one-man show in New York the night before. I know Paul Heyman was his guest. So JR was in town. They brought him in to do commentary for one match on this show, and it was Aleister Black against Hideo Itami. Great entrance for Aleister Black. I don't know how it came across on TV, but in person, it was just tremendous stuff. And, you know, NXT, they do a lot of little things right that they get wrong on the main roster. And we've certainly seen live performances on TV before. We've seen bands perform live at pay-per-views and on Monday Night Raw. And sometimes it's good, and a lot of times it's not good. And frankly, we see it at WrestleMania sometimes, and it sort of interrupts the flow of the show. Well, what they did here on NXT, I'd like to see them do more of, which is they opened the show with a live performance by, I think it was one of the bands who did one of the main theme songs for TakeOver this year. They had a little stage sort of off to the side of the ramp that they had set up before the show started. They had the band perform live the intro for the show. So when they put the intro video package up at the very beginning and they play the theme song, well, they just had them play the song live. So while they were performing, they were cutting in and out, showing you the live performance, but also showing you all of the, you know, footage building up each of the matches on the card. That's 3, 4, 5 minutes that would have been killed by video footage anyway. So it's not taking anything away from the show. It's not making the show any longer. And frankly, it was a lot of fun. You know, people are down there moshing to the music and stuff. So I'd like to see them do more of that. That's the way, if you're going to have live performances, that you should incorporate them into the show. And here's another great example of how to use live performances. So the band, and I didn't write their name down, so I apologize to them. I don't have their name, but they were good. They performed Aleister Black's song live. And at least in the arena, it came off pretty epic, I must say. One thing that was very funny, from where we were sitting, We could see Aleister Black walk out. This is before they even started performing the music. He walks out. He literally just laid down. And so for a good minute and a half, 2 minutes, I'm just looking at Aleister Black laying there. he's just laying there. And then finally the band begins to tune up and they start playing. And you know, the little platform elevates Aleister Black up to his feet. And he kind of walks through the band as they're performing live. It was so great. It was so great. And I hope to see them do more of that in the future. His nose, I believe, was busted open. I don't know if it was broken, but it was busted early in the match. I think it might have been on a knee strike from Hideo Itami, because for the rest of the match, well, first of all, you can see the referee put the gloves on. As soon as the gloves go on, you know that there's blood somewhere. Blood's pouring from some orifice in someone's body. And he was wearing sort of like a blood mustache in a way. It was right, you know, the upper lip right under the nose. So I'm guessing it was on that knee. Itami went for the GTS. Black slipped out. Ended up hitting the Black Mass kick for the win. In between, it was probably the most competitive match Aleister Black has had since coming to NXT. I'd say more competitive even than the match he had with Kyle O'Reilly on TV a few weeks ago. Probably equally as long. It was a struggle, as it should have been. You don't want to completely bury poor Hideo here. I would even say Hideo honestly took most of the match. Every now and then he would stop to shout at people, give me respect, show me respect. But in the end, Black hit the Black Mass kick for the win. And, you know, I will say, this guy just, he has it. Whatever it is, however you want to define it, right? He's got it. And I think it's going to be very hard. Not impossible, but hard, I think, for them to mess this up once he comes up to the main roster. Here's at least part of why I think a lot of these guys end up not feeling as special when they do come up to the main roster. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it, okay? And there, frankly, are guys who are just misused. Bad booking, bad writing. Maybe they're just not very good at promos, and you rely on that a lot more when you come up to the main roster. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why certain guys fail or certain guys just don't do as well. But I think one thing that you have to keep in mind here is that NXT in a lot of ways operates like an old-school promotion. So, yes, you have TV every single week. First of all, it's only an hour of TV. An hour of TV is a hell of a lot easier to digest than 2 or 3 hours of TV. So because the format of the show is only 1 hour, you don't see Aleister Black on TV every week. Maybe it's every other week. Maybe it's every 2 weeks. So that right there keeps these guys fresh. Because if you saw somebody like Aleister Black doing the same entrance every single week, you know, after a couple of months, it's not going to be as special anymore. So just by the very nature of the show, you're not seeing these guys every single week on TV. The takeover shows are not monthly. The takeover shows are more quarterly than anything else. I don't know, how many takeovers are they up to now? Maybe 5 or 6, right? 5 or 6 of them about that much each year? Okay, so right there, your special events, it's very much like it used to be when you had the Rumble, WrestleMania, King of the Ring, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. You get these big shows a handful of times, maybe half a dozen times each year. Not 12 times a year, not 14 times a year, not 18 times a year. So when he comes out and has an entrance like he did on this show, you can't do that every single takeover. But when you do it, it feels special, right? It feels like a big deal. We haven't even heard Aleister Black speak. He hasn't said a word in the ring. He hasn't had a single major promo. I don't know what kind of promo he is. Maybe he can't talk for shit. You know, I haven't been on YouTube lately looking up old Tommy N promos. Maybe he's a fantastic pro. Maybe he's a very articulate guy. I don't know. To me, doesn't matter. He doesn't have to be. This guy's the silent assassin here on NXT. So when he goes to the main roster, things are going to be different. He's going to be on TV every single week, just like Nakamura. He's going to be on TV every single week. He's going to have to talk at some point, unless they give him a manager, which I don't think he needs. I think the guy is talented enough to, you know, to make those adjustments and do just fine. But you got to just look at the format of the show and the way NXT just generally works. It's a hell of a lot closer to an old school promotion, or like WWF used to be, than the main roster is now. And I think the fact that they just have so many hours of content that they have to produce, it does inherently make some of these guys just not feel as special. And the really good ones can overcome that. And the ones that maybe it's more smoke and mirrors, maybe they're not as good, those are the ones, I think, ultimately who end up floundering. Hopefully he's not one of those people. They showed Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Becky Lynch at ringside for this next match, which was Asuka defending her NXT Women's Championship, now over 500 days as champion, against Ember Moon. This was the match I was most looking forward to going into the show. This was, if not the best, I would say the number two best match on the entire show behind the opener. It was a very good match. Part of what made it so good and so fun was the drama. They really have created this Undertaker vibe in NXT for this streak, right? It's not the same exact thing. It's not like she's had this streak going for 20-some-odd years. But this streak has become a very big deal. In fact, I noticed when I looked up at the Titantron, or the video board up above, that the hashtag in the corner of the screen was The Streak, which I thought was kind of funny. If you remember, I predicted an Ember Moon win here. I just felt like all the pieces were there. They were going to pull the trigger and have the feel-good moment, and they were going to do the title change. That would not have been what I would have done. I didn't want Ember Moon to end the streak. I thought she would. Thankfully, I was wrong. I'm actually happy to be wrong here. Asuka is still the NXT Women's Champion. Her reign continues, at least for a while longer. I do think it was the right move to make. Maybe not so much for Ember Moon. It does put her in a tough spot now, but they've got something with this streak, and whether she ends up coming up to the main roster undefeated, or if she does, if they do go the way that I had pitched many, many weeks ago, and I'd like to see them do, which is have her drop it to the winner of the Mae Young Classic, depending on who that is, then that's the way to go, I think, with Asuka. That's really the right move to make here. But this match had a big fight buzz to it, and it was all because of that streak. If not, it would have been, a good match that the crowd probably would have been, into, but it wouldn't have had that same vibe to it. And so I don't think they're ready to squander that just yet. Got off to a quick start. I mean, Ember went right after Asuka from the outset. She was getting some boos. It may have come across on TV that Ember did get some boos, especially during the ring intros, but it wasn't like she was booed out of the building or anything like that. There was one point where Bayley was shown, I don't know if it was here or earlier when she did an interview on the pre, I don't remember when it was, but at some point Bayley was shown. I thought she got some boos. Nothing like dramatic or anything like that. But there were certainly pockets of people who were booing. Asuka was going for the Asuka lock. I think went for it a couple times, actually. Ember put Asuka in one of her own chicken wings at one point. Ember kicked out of the butt bump, as I like to call it, which is the running hip attack by Asuka. Asuka gave Ember a big boot to the face. Ember with the slam. Put her in the Tree of Woe. In the corner, hit the double foot stomp, did Ember, to Asuka at one point. Couldn't get the win with it, though. So finally, they build to the Eclipse. Now, this has been a very protected move. One of the most protected moves, in fact, in all of WWE has been the Eclipse. We have yet to see Ember hit it and lose. We have yet to see her hit it and have somebody kick out of it. So in a lot of ways, the match was sort of building to this spot. That was really the big question. She's going to hit the Eclipse. Does she win with it, or does Asuka become the first person to kick out? And we all know the answer now. She hit it. Asuka took a great bump off it, too. She, flew up into the air. She almost looked like a Scott Hall-type bump. Not quite that dramatic, but Ember went for the pin. Near fall. Place went nuts. People were so relieved when Asuka kicked out of this move. Ember couldn't believe it. In fact, She almost was acting like a whiny heel here at this point in the match, because she was trying to put Asuka away and just could not do it. She was stamping her hands and feet on the mat in frustration, which we've seen people like Alexa Bliss do before. At one point, the camera zoomed in on her face, and she clearly muttered the words, "I hate you," to Asuka. I think this was after the first kickout from the Eclipse. She climbed back up to the top rope. Asuka pulled the referee in the way. Ember said, "Well, fuck it, I'm going to jump anyway." And referee ducked out of the way. Ember hit a giant crossbody, which Asuka rolled through on. And that was also, I think that was a near fall. She had the trunks, and the referee saw it and actually would not count three. Some people booed that. They booed the referee abiding by the rules, these people here in New York. Ember got a very, very, very close near fall with a super kick that connected. There were a lot of people who bought into that as the finish, but again, Asuka kicked out. And in doing so, she was able to lock Ember Moon in the Asuka lock. And once she does that, and she gets the body scissors, she wraps the legs around you, there ain't no getting out of that. Once that happens, it's like when Kurt Angle used to put the ankle lock on, like he had the match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 21, put him in the ankle lock. Once Kurt would fall to the mat and would just lock that like leg vine on, there was no getting out of that. You knew it was only a matter of time before the tap out. Same thing here with Ember Moon. She struggled, she was rolling back and forth, and she just, there was no escape. And so finally she tapped. The people were very, very happy inside the Barclays Center. I was happy to be wrong, because I was convinced they were doing the title change. And in fact, Asuka, her reign continues. She will live another day as the NXT champion. There was a standing ovation for Ember Moon at the very end when Asuka left. Ember, she appeared to have been crying. Her mascara has, you know, at this point now, it's run down her face. And I will say she doesn't look so intimidating with those contact lenses after she's been bawling her eyes out. But, you know, again, I go back to what I had pitched. I said weeks. It was probably even a few months ago at this point. Kairi Sane, right? The former Kairi Hojo from Stardom. She's in. She's in the Mae Young Classic. I had pitched the idea for her to go all the way and win the whole thing, because she's got to be the best person in that tournament. There's a lot of talented ladies in that tournament, but I don't think any as talented as her. And so my idea was to have her win. And yeah, it's, you know, one Japanese wrestler against another Japanese wrestler, but, you know, the story can almost be it takes another Japanese wrestler from that culture or from that part of the world to really step up and actually give Asuka a run for her money, and she can be the one to end the streak and take the championship from her, and that'll pave the way for Asuka to move on up to Raw or SmackDown. That is, you know, provided that Kairi Sane makes it to the finals. You know, I didn't look at any of the, you know, match outcomes or anything like that for the Mae Young Classic. I know round one will drop on the network next week. I look forward to that. Should she make it to the finals, my hope would be that she takes the entire thing and that's the big match going forward, whether it's at the November TakeOver. I don't know if they can really hold off until WrestleMania weekend next year. That would be a gigantic match. If they could do that match between her and Sane at, you know, WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans next year, whatever TakeOver show that is, that would be, that really, in my opinion, not even knowing what the NXT Championship match would be, if you had that match, Kairi Sane against Asuka on the card for the championship, and at that point Asuka was still unbeaten, to me, that's the main event. You put that match on last. No questions. I don't care if Adam Cole, Drew McIntyre, I don't care who's in the championship match. The women's match, if it gets to that point, should go on last. And frankly, even if they do it in November, even if they don't do it WrestleMania weekend, let's say they do it in the fall, to me, that still is the main event of your next TakeOver show. It's Asuka defending against the winner of the Mae Young Classic. So, anyway, I was convinced that Ember was gonna do it. They showed her with her family when they arrived at the building. We saw her parents. We saw her fiancé. And she still lost. It's hard to see where she goes from here. It's certainly, you know, a rematch with Asuka. I don't see the point. She's already had a couple of matches with her. She's lost fair and square. I almost think Asuka stays put. There probably are people who think she's going to make it to the main roster now and just continue to hold the NXT title, which is possible, but I almost think Asuka stays put. Maybe Ember goes to Raw or SmackDown, because, again, like Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, what is left for Ember Moon to do in NXT if not challenge for that championship? So perhaps that's the move that they make, and now Ember, after that standing ovation she got at the Barclays Center, comes back tomorrow night or Tuesday and makes her debut. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Main event was Bobby Roode defending the NXT Championship against Drew McIntyre. Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe were introduced at ringside in the front row before this match. Although, from what I could tell, Joe left before the match started. Kevin Owens, though, stayed out there for the duration of the match, probably waiting for his boy Adam Cole to come on out. We had the NYPD Pipe and Drum Band. They did a little march down the aisle, and they sort of lined the aisleway for Drew McIntyre's entrance. Not going to lie, as soon as I heard the bagpipes, I thought of Piper. I briefly thought to myself, oh my God, he faked his death, but it didn't happen. You'd be surprised how many people said that about Brian Pillman after he passed away. It's like the Tupac of WWE. Like, oh, he faked his own death. He'll come back at some point. I'd love to see it, but you know, not going to happen. So McIntyre came out, and then Bobby Roode, of course, had his glorious entrance, which I think he's probably I would say now that the Undertaker is possibly retired. I have to qualify that now when I say that, because I am convinced that we have not seen the last of the Undertaker at a WrestleMania. We may not have seen the last of the Undertaker at a SummerSlam, and I'm going to talk about that in a little bit as well. But I think Bobby Roode has now taken the mantle from him as longest entrance in WWE, and the time it takes for him to come out and get to the ring. I didn't time it. I should have busted out a stopwatch on my phone. But my God, his entrance is very long. This match, I don't want to say it was a bad match. It was not a bad match. I would say, though, you know, of the matches on this show, maybe it was the weakest. I mean, I can't say there was anything about this match that was that impressive. It was a good match, but I think it was below most of the other matches on the show, honestly. And that maybe is just more of a statement about how really good the other matches were, not so much how bad this one was. I really didn't think they were going to take the championship from Roode. I really didn't. I thought they were going to drag things out a little bit more with McIntyre. They didn't really heat him up until about 2 or 3 weeks ago. He was sort of in NXT. He was having the odd match here and there, but they really weren't doing much with him. And then sort of out of nowhere, he gets the title shot. And I thought, well, I could see them wanting to just, you know, do some sort of disputed finish or something that will lead to a rematch. And that's when McIntyre will win. They had other ideas, evidently, because they, in fact, did change the championship here. I also noticed, by the way, Dana Warrior and her daughters were in the front row having a good time. So they were, I assume they were just the invited guests of Triple H. Bobby Roode had this gigantic bruise on his, I want to say his left thigh. I think it may have come from the slam on the apron, because early in the match, it was almost like a tilt-a-whirl slam that he gave Roode, and Roode landed like ass first, like lower back ass first on the apron. That may have been where he suffered the bruise. I'm not sure where else it would have happened. There was a great spot. I called it Lucha Bobby, where he was going for the glorious DDT, and he came off the ropes and did like this tilt-a-whirl into the glorious DDT, which is actually really cool. And I'm watching this 40-year-old Bobby Roode doing like a lucha spot. I just thought that was funny. People were convinced that was going to be the finish, but in fact, it was not, and McIntyre did kick out. Skipping ahead here, McIntyre was setting up for his finish, the big boot he calls the Claymore. Bobby Roode was pretending to basically just be kind of out, you know, like out on his feet. Drew picked him up, went for the Future Shock DDT. Roode hit a backstabber instead. Drew did eventually hit the Future Shock, but only for a near fall. We had McIntyre hitting the Claymore in the end. He did finally hit the kick. And I was watching this going, he's going to kick out. He's going to kick out. He's going to kick out. And then he didn't kick out. And there were some people who were very surprised. Most people probably expected it, but I was surprised. I did not expect that to be the finish. But he hit his move and he won. And, you know, they did the whole emotional thing where they hand him the championship and he's sort of staring at it and almost in tears. And, you know, good for him. I'm happy for Drew McIntyre because from everything I've heard, and I watched that little documentary that Dave Lagana did, it's about a 23-minute video, I want to say, of sort of following McIntyre, his final days on the independents before signing with NXT. Here's a guy who got cut from WWE, right? And Jinder, when I interviewed Jinder Mahal on Friday night, he even mentioned this. You know, he and Drew basically were cut, I think, from WWE around the same time. And he was just completely misused for so long. Came in with so much promise, this tall, good-looking guy. And Vince McMahon, of all people, gives him the introduction. They call him, you know, the future, whatever, the chosen one. And I know there was a bunch of stuff that happened with him and his wife or fiance at the time, Taryn Terrell. I think they were at, like, a Playboy Mansion party. I forgot all the stories. But, you know, they're in the doghouse. This guy has heat. It's all this, you know, crazy nonsense like we hear now with Rusev. We heard that with Rusev and Lana. We see what they've done with them. And he ended up in 3MB, total comedy gimmick. He's in WLC with Hornswoggle And was that Hornswoggle and El Torito, I think, right? But Drew, I remember Drew being involved in that match. I think he did like a giant dive over the ropes. Like, he was killing himself in that match. But that's what they had him doing. And then finally they cut him loose. He went out on his own. He traveled all over the world. He made a name for himself. He had to build his reputation back up. And now here he is with the NXT Championship, you know, headlining a takeover show. It's a good story. Just one that I think maybe, peaked a little too quickly, given that he only came back a few months ago. But it's a great sort of feel-good story for him, that he busted his ass and he earned it. So he wins the championship. I'm sitting there thinking, man, I talked that whole ROH faction idea up a few weeks ago, and I was maybe I worked myself into a shoot, right? I'm like, oh man, yeah, I was really hoping that they would do something here. I was shocked that we didn't see any of Roderick Strong. I will say that. I am stunned that he was not involved in this match in some way. He has been involved in this feud with Rude and even with McIntyre every step of the way. Every step of the way, he's been, you know, trying to get at Rude. Security is holding, you know, him back, or Rude would come out with security, not to protect him from McIntyre, but to protect him from Roderick Strong. And then what we saw on TV a couple of weeks ago, where they made the match where, okay, you know, right before TakeOver, we'll do McIntyre against Strong. And even if, doesn't matter what the outcome of the match is, the match at TakeOver will stay the same. But at least if Roddy wins, he will earn himself a championship match against Bobby Roode or whoever the champion is. And they had that match on NXT television last week, and Roode got involved and basically screwed Roddy over. You know, he ruined his chances of getting that match. I thought for sure he would be part, and maybe he still can be, but I thought for sure if they were going to do some sort of run-in with Adam Cole and all these ROH guys, that he'd be, if not leading the charge, because I always thought Cole would be the one to lead the charge, but I certainly thought he would be involved. And if nothing else, even if he wasn't involved in that, maybe he'd be one of the ones beaten down. But I thought for sure he would show up and do something during the match. At some point, try to get involved, maybe get, you know, restrained and taken to the back. We didn't see any of Roderick Strong here. So that, I will say that surprised me. What didn't surprise me was that we got the return of Red Dragon here. They came back out. Remember what I said earlier? I tweeted this out after they initially showed up. I said, I don't know that we've seen the last of these two guys. So they come out of the crowd. McIntyre turns around. He's kind of surprised. He sees Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, and he is distracted. Now the place goes nuts, because who's coming through the crowd? Adam Cole. And he comes in, and he immediately attacks Drew McIntyre. Now everybody is... people were already leaving. And I look up, and I see these people who are like... they're almost at the concessions. And as they hear this buzz in the crowd, and they hear people going nuts, they come rushing back out like, oh, what did I miss? What did I miss? It's kind of like a movie, right? When you go see like one of these superhero movies now, you can't just like when the movie ends, get up and leave. Now you got to sit there. You got to wait for the credits, because you know that when the credits are over, they're going to show you 30 seconds of something. So you got to stick around. You got to wait. And sure enough, out come Adam Cole, and they beat down Drew McIntyre. Red Dragon picked McIntyre up and positioned him for an Adam Cole super kick. Looked, reminded me a little of Shawn Michaels here, I have to say. Just in terms of, I don't know, the kick and, I don't know if it's the hair or what it is, but he laid out McIntyre with the super kick. He picked up the NXT Championship and dropped it down, and the show went off the air with Adam Cole and Red Dragon posing together. Now, I wasn't sure if they were going to call him Adam Cole or not. I see no reason for them not to. I did go back and watch the end, and they clearly were calling him Adam Cole, and so he'll get to keep his name, and again, that's the right thing to do. And I don't know if this aired on TV or not. I would imagine not, because it looked like they cut off with them in the ring. But when Red Dragon and Adam Cole left, Cole stopped, turned around, and did his Adam Cole Bebe pose, and people went crazy for it. So a very, very cool ending. I'm very happy to see them go with this quote-unquote ROH invasion. It's not as though they're billing it as a Ring of Honor invasion. I just mean by that this is a collection of talent best known from Ring of Honor coming in at the same time and being paired up. And there are plenty of fans at Full Sail who know their history and who may look at them as sort of this ROH invading faction, however they want to take it. But I think that this is, exactly what needed to happen to shake things up a little bit. All of a sudden now, the era of Bobby Roode is over. Drew McIntyre now is the champion and doesn't even have time to celebrate his title win. He's immediately laid out by the new guys. So now we have some new blood here in NXT. And, you know, you're going to hear some of the audio from my interview with the now former champion, Bobby Roode. He was champion when I talked to him on Friday. And one of the things I had asked him about was, are you content, you know, staying put right now in the near term in NXT and continuing to build it? And he made the point. He said, you know, I get asked that question a lot, but, you know, I look at NXT as sort of a viable third brand. I don't look at it as a step down. You have Raw, you have SmackDown, and you have NXT. And the more that they add people like the Red Dragons of the world and Adam Cole and people like that, you can absolutely make the case for NXT being maybe not... You can never say it's on the same level because they're not running the same buildings, the same size buildings every week that Raw and SmackDown. There's just some indisputable differences that you cannot reconcile between NXT and the main roster that just inherently makes the main roster a bigger deal. But they have taken great steps, Triple H has, to make NXT a viable third brand. It is no longer a developmental brand. You have developmental talent who are able to work with more experienced, you know, indie guys on that roster. But you can no longer call NXT a developmental brand. Not when you have Drew McIntyre and Adam Cole and Red Dragon and Ember Moon and Asuka and people and Eric Young and people like that with titles and all the main storylines dominating the show week after week. So Roode is absolutely right in that respect. Now, after this fantastic takeover show, and like I said earlier, when has there not been a great takeover show? Some have been better than others, but I have yet to see a bad one. WWE has its work cut out for them trying to top that show tonight. If they can do that, if SummerSlam turns out to be as good or better than TakeOver tonight, then that means that this is going to go down as one hell of a weekend at the Barclays Center. I have my doubts. Let them prove me wrong tonight, but I have my doubts. So now this brings us to the question of what happens to some of these people like Bobby Roode, right? There's rumors already of a main roster shakeup, and maybe as early as this week, Daniel Bryan, Kurt Angle, possibly recruiting a couple of people from NXT to each of their rosters. Who might that be? Bobby Roode seems like a slam dunk to me. They brought him in, you know, 40 years old, obviously has years and years of experience under his belt. Was NXT champion for a good chunk of the year ever since January, so that's a healthy title run right there, and seemingly the era of Roode is over. You could argue, well, he deserves a rematch, but you know what? As I pointed out to JD when we were talking at the Sound Off meetup yesterday, I said to him, and thank him, by the way, for stopping by, but I said to him, I said, you know, there's yet to be a single person who has ever held that Universal Championship on Raw who has ever gotten a rematch for the title. It is the polar opposite of what the typical WWE way of doing things is. Finn Balor got hurt, never got a rematch. Kevin Owens lost to Goldberg, never got a rematch. Goldberg lost to Brock, never got a rematch. I think Brock is retaining tonight, so I don't think he's losing it yet. But even if he does, I'm not sure Brock is going to get, at least not an immediate rematch. In fact, if Brock loses, they have already said in storyline that he will leave. He cares not about getting a rematch. So Bobby Roode doesn't need to get a rematch. All Bobby Roode has to do is show up on Raw tomorrow night or show up on SmackDown on Tuesday. I don't know that I have a preference with Roode one way or the other on which brand he ends up on. For his sake, it might be better to be on SmackDown, quite frankly. But just looking, you know, I'm just looking at the main event scene right now with those titles. You know, I don't know. I might lean towards SmackDown with Roode. If Nakamura wins the championship tonight from Jinder, you know, maybe Jinder gets a rematch. But, you know, you could potentially do Roode and Nakamura, but we've already seen that in NXT. So I don't know about that. But, you know, Roode and AJ Styles you could do. Roode and John Cena. You could do, you know, there's different options for him being on that brand. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Bobby Roode on SmackDown. But either way, I would have to think he's a slam dunk at some point very, very soon to end up on that main roster because he has done all he can do in NXT. He filled his role very well. I don't think he was ever meant to be a long, long-term champion. They have the title on McIntyre. McIntyre is somebody they could really build around down there. He's a younger guy. And Rude can move on. Because really, you know, he's what, 40, 41? Same thing with Styles. AJ was able to completely bypass NXT. But even if he had gone, you didn't want him down there for that long because these are his best years right now. What are you going to do? You going to keep him in NXT until he's 44? Okay, let's bring him on up now. I remember when Samoa Joe came in. Well, the plan is for Joe to just be in NXT. There's no plans whatsoever for him to ever be on the main roster. It never made any sense to me. You knew Samoa Joe, as over and as popular as he was, that Vince would want him at some point. So, of course, after a while, now, well, all of a sudden there's interest in having Samoa Joe on the main roster, and then he ends up on the main roster. These guys inevitably will end up there, and you don't want to waste whatever prime years they have left, you know, dawdling away, you know, down in Full Sail if they've already had a big run there. So I think Rude is a lock. I think Authors of Pain, frankly, are a lock to make their way up to the main roster. They just suffered their first loss in NXT. They could keep feuding with Sanity. I don't really see the point in doing so. Some people may disagree with that and say, Solomonster, these guys are very inexperienced. They've hurt guys before. They have no business being on the main roster. We need more tag teams. That's just a fact. We need more tag teams on the main roster. And they had their run. It was a dominant run. There are plenty of people they've called up that don't have a whole lot of experience. Some do well, a lot of them don't. I think they do okay for themselves. I don't know if they would keep Paul Ellering as their manager. I don't know if Ellering wants to go on the road full-time with them. So I don't know how that would work. But, yeah, I could absolutely see the Authors of Pain coming up to the main roster. You know, put them on Raw. And I'll throw one more name at you. I mentioned Ember Moon before. Maybe keep Asuka down and move Ember Moon up to the women's division. But the one name I will give, and I have nothing to base this on, just was thinking about this, would not be surprised to see Aleister Black called up to the main roster. I just got done talking about him and his entrance and how special it was and, you know, what's going to happen when he does come to the main roster. Is he going to be a special? We may find out very soon because I could see him being somebody they look at and go, man, we need to start using this guy now. This guy's really good. Between the entrance and just his appearance, he feels like a star. We need stars on TV. If I'm Kurt Angle or I'm Daniel Bryan, you know, all due respect to the people on the undercard in NXT, but I'm looking at a guy like Black saying, I want him. Why would Kurt Angle or Daniel Bryan, if they're there scouting talent, not want the best talent? Why would they not want to go after a young guy like an Aleister Black and bring him in? They should be fighting over this guy. That's what they should be doing. But one of the reasons I thought about it was Drew McIntyre just won the championship. And, you know, Drew's a babyface, and clearly going forward, the feud is going to be McIntyre and Adam Cole, probably heading into the next TakeOver show. You know, Aleister Black, when is it going to be his time? This guy has NXT champion written all over him, but it just seems like the timing just isn't right for it. So what do? You keep him down there for another year until he wins the NXT title? Does he even have to win the NXT title? I don't think he does. Not everybody who passes through NXT wins the NXT championship. So, Aleister Black up on Raw or SmackDown, maybe this week, maybe, I don't know about this week, maybe, but in the very near future, absolutely, I could see that, without question. SummerSlam is tonight, back at the Barclays Center, and actually, just give me a second, I just got a text message. Apparently I am going to SummerSlam, so there you go. We are going to SummerSlam, so I will be there tonight. If you are there and you see me, say hello. I saw a bunch of people at Barclays at the NXT show last night. So I'll be there for SummerSlam tonight, which probably means that my usual YouTube review won't be going up until sometime late morning, early afternoon tomorrow, just as an FYI. But I did my predictions a week early, if you remember. They're up on episode 508. They're up on TV Trax's channel. Shout out to Trax for all his support. So you can go back and see. I'm not really gonna change my predictions because I just think that would be kind of crummy if I did. Kind of lame. What I did not expect was that they would take some SummerSlam matches and actually just give them away for free on TV. So Tozawa and Neville had a championship match for the Cruiserweight belt on Raw Monday night. Now, if you remember, I had picked Tozawa to be the one to dethrone Neville and win the Cruiserweight Championship, and sure enough, Tozawa won the championship. He didn't do it at SummerSlam like I thought he would. He did it 6 days early. So he is the new Cruiserweight Champion. They are having a rematch on the kickoff show tonight. I will make a new prediction, being that my first one is now old news at this point. But for the rematch, I think they're going to switch the belt back to Neville. I actually think Neville is going to win the Cruiserweight Championship back tonight. So I'm going to go with Neville in the rematch. They have added the Tag Team Championship match from the SmackDown side between the Usos and the New Day. They've added that to the kickoff show, which has upset a lot of people. And, you know, look, I could go either way on it. What bothers me, I guess, is like what happened at WrestleMania, where I could see, you know, some guys having beef if, let's say, it affects their payday. That's kind of shitty. Like, I thought putting Neville and Austin Aries on the pre-show this year, on the kickoff show, was kind of shitty. Obviously, it bothered Aries because he tweeted about it because they got left off the DVD. And, you know, when that happens, you're technically not part of the show. So for us, for the fans, it doesn't affect us. You know what? I shouldn't say that. That's not true. I made the point to somebody on Twitter. This bothers me. Maybe it doesn't bother you. One of the big differences between the matches on the pre-show and the matches on the main card, you get commercials on the pre-show. That annoys some people. Some people, they don't mind it. They do other things, or if they're not watching live, they could just fast forward to the commercial. But if you're watching live, you got to sit through commercials during what should be a pay-per-view match. That is annoying. So yes, I think that is a valid gripe that some people have. If you're going to the show, I will tell you this: I'm going to SummerSlam tonight, and I don't know that I'm gonna be there for all of the pre-show matches because to get into the building, you know, I'm coming from another event. In fact, I know I'm going to miss some of the pre-show matches because I'm doing the event with Justin Lepar and JD until 6 o'clock. So if the pre-show starts at 5, because now we have a two-hour pre-show, I'm guaranteed to miss at least one of these matches. So yes, there are legitimate gripes that people have about these matches when they are moved on to the kickoff show. You can't just say, well, fans complain about everything. What's the difference? It's all the same. You know what? It really isn't all the same. It really isn't. And I'm looking forward to that match because I've become a very big fan of the Usos' work of late, so I'll be pretty pissed off if I miss that match, but what the hell are you going to do? I'm going with the Usos, picking the Usos to win. And Jason Jordan is going to team yet again with Matt and Jeff Hardy. They already did this match on Monday. I have no idea why they gave this match away on TV. As soon as I saw where they were going with it on Monday night, I thought, okay, these guys now have a match for SummerSlam. They're going to do a six-man tag with Jordan and the Hardys against The Miz, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel. Then they just gave it to us on TV. So now they're doing it again. I assume this time The Miz and his flunkies will get the win, so I am predicting a win for the Miztourage. Like I said, all my other predictions, I'm just going through them real quick here. I'm pretty much sticking with all of them. I have Finn Balor. Yeah, you know, they did Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt on Monday. They just couldn't help themselves. And Bray got the win. Now, I had Balor winning, so I guess technically I was wrong on that. But I'm sticking with Balor here for the rematch. Tonight it's being billed as the Return of the Demon here on this pay-per-view. It's the first appearance of the Demon since SummerSlam last year in this very same building when Balor got hurt and he won the Universal title. I do think Balor wins the match tonight. I also hope we finally get to see something different out of this demon persona. A new move or something that differentiates it from every other Finn Balor match. There's got to be something different about the demon besides, you know, paint. And like I said a few weeks ago, the Bob Marley wig. Okay, there's got to be something else that differentiates him. Naomi, I'm sticking with Naomi to defend her SmackDown Women's Championship successfully over Natalya. If you remember, I had Carmella attempting to cash in and failing, and I do kind of want to change my prediction here, but given, you know, in light of what happened on TV this week, which I'm going to get to that in a little bit, but I, you know what, I'm going to just stick with my original, I'm probably wrong on this one, but I'm going to stick to my original prediction that Carmella cashes in, she loses, and Naomi, remains the women's champion. I'm going to stick with that. Randy Orton and Rusev. I have Rusev as my pick. Very distressed to read about these rumors. I don't know where these rumors came from, if they were reported by a site like The Observer or PW Insider or The Torch, or if it's just somebody pulled it out of their ass. So I don't put too much stock into it yet, but it could very well be legitimate that Rusev is unhappy with his... let me say this. I don't doubt that Rusev is very unhappy about his position in WWE. I believe that 110%. The rumor is that he has requested or may soon request his release from WWE. Whether they give it to him, that's a different story. I have no idea how much time is left on his contract. His wife works for the company. How that might affect her, we don't know. It shouldn't, but that's not always how these things work. You know, Rusev says, I'd like to leave, and all of a sudden Lana has heat. That's how stupid the wrestling business can be sometimes. But if the rumor is true, I think it's a real shame, because Rusev is one of the most entertaining guys. It's a weird thing with Rusev, because I will watch some Rusev matches, and I really enjoy them. Like the matches, or the first match he had with Gable, that one stands out to me, because that was the most recent one I could think of. But it's not that Rusev, as like an in-ring performer, is such an exciting, dynamic performer. He's a good wrestler, but it's his antics outside the ring that really entertain me the most. And I know that they could be doing so much more with this guy, and they could really be utilizing that a lot more. And it just seems like this guy is in quicksand and just cannot crawl out of it. I don't know what he did. I don't know if it goes back to when he cut his hair without telling them, and they were pissed about that. I've heard that's one of the reasons why he has heat. You know, remember back when he and Lana first announced their engagement, it was all over TMZ. It happened to come at a time when they were doing a storyline where Lana was kind of split away from Rusev, and that pissed off WWE, which I understand. That I can actually get. I wouldn't, you know, put them in the doghouse for a year because of it, but I can understand WWE being frustrated over something like that. But at this point, to not be doing really much of anything with Rusev is inexcusable, frankly. And if he wants out, then it's hard to argue, you know, that he shouldn't want out. Because he's somebody who I think could go somewhere else and have a lot of success. He's somebody who could probably go somewhere else and have a lot of success, and then 2-3 years from now, come back. Kind of like McIntyre did. So, if it's true, it's more of an indictment, I think, on WWE's misuse of him, and not because he, isn't up to snuff or anything like that. We have John Cena against Baron Corbin. I had picked Baron Corbin to win. Baron Corbin was my pick. I believe now more than ever that Baron Corbin is going to win. I am sticking with him as my pick, especially in light of what happened on Tuesday. I'll wait till I get to the SmackDown review and give you my thoughts on that. But I'm sticking with him. That and the SummerSlam curse. Remember, John Cena has not won a SummerSlam since he buried the Nexus in 2010, and he should not win here either. Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks for the Raw Women's Championship. I'm sticking with Alexa as my pick to retain. Ambrose and Rollins are my pick to win the tag titles from Sheamus and Cesaro. I was there, by the way, at the 2K launch, like I mentioned, when they had their little brawl. Peter Rosenberg from Hot 97 was doing a little Q&A with the two teams. Things broke down. I was off to the side. I saw chairs go flying, and put some video up of it on my Twitter. If you didn't see that, it's about 20 seconds if you want to go check that out. But I'm going with Ambrose and Rollins to win the titles, AJ Styles to retain the U.S. title over Kevin Owens. I'm sticking with Shinsuke to win the WWE Championship from Jinder Mahal. And I'm sticking with Brock Lesnar in the main event to retain the Universal Championship over Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, and the person who I would like to see win, Samoa Joe. But unfortunately, who I do not think is going to win. So those are my SummerSlam picks. Again, not nothing too dramatically different from last week. The Undertaker. Let me mention this really quick, because one of the big rumors going around is that The Undertaker is in town. The Undertaker may even be at SummerSlam. Well, The Undertaker may be at SummerSlam, but he could be visiting backstage at SummerSlam. I don't see a spot for this guy on the show. What could he possibly be coming back for? What could he possibly... He had a hip procedure or a couple of hip procedures a number of months ago. He was spotted at the Hospital for Special Surgery here in New York City many months ago after WrestleMania. We know that. this alleged photo of him on a flight to New York City, he could very well just be coming into town to visit his doctor. Maybe he timed it so he can come in to visit his doctor, and while WWE is in town, visit with a bunch of friends and hang out backstage. Do we even know the photo was recent? Plus, it's like an obstructed view. Is it even The Undertaker? We literally have seen an Undertaker versus fake Undertaker match many years ago, so, you know, it could very well be somebody else with, a tattoo sleeve and some long hair. Now, it probably was him. How recent the photo was, I don't know. There's no timestamp on it or anything like that. I'm not convinced that we're seeing Undertaker on the show tonight. I don't see any reason for it, unless he's going to screw Roman Reigns, kick him in the dick, you know, the way he did Brock Lesnar a couple of years ago, and then have a match with Roman in September or at Hell in a Cell in October and get his win back from WrestleMania. I think that would be a terrible mistake. I think that would be a huge mistake. The Undertaker that we saw at WrestleMania was not very good. I mean, he was hurting. He's not getting any younger. He's in a rough way, okay? He's not decrepit or anything like that, wheelchair-bound. But he didn't look good. Let's be honest here. He was serviceable, but he did not look good. That was in April. And if he has had some sort of surgery or operation since then, I don't see how the Undertaker we saw in April is going to be much better here in August. And here's the other reason why I hope there's nothing to any of this, and I don't think there is. Because I maintain that the way that they ended that match at WrestleMania was the perfect finish. I'll tell you right now, I do believe that The Undertaker is coming back. I think he'll wrestle at WrestleMania next year. I think that's a big mistake. Because I think the way that he sort of descended into hell and left the jacket and the hat and the gloves and the ring and everything went black and they went off the air. Was it sad? Of course it was sad. Was it depressing? A little bit. Was it a badass way for him to go out? You bet your ass it was. I think that was a hell of a way for him to go out. So I don't see what is to be gained from him coming back at SummerSlam. I could see what's to be gained by him coming back at WrestleMania in the city where the streak was broken and maybe they want him to go out with a win. Yeah, that I could see that being a big draw and a big attraction for the WrestleMania card next year. I wouldn't do it. But I do just have this gnawing feeling that, you know, between them, every time they qualify their statements, by the way, right? Like, Roman will go out there and say, I'm the man who retired The Undertaker. But whenever the announcers mention it, they never ever say The Undertaker when he retired or he retired. They say, believed to have retired or, you know, may have retired. They always qualify their statement. Why do you think they do that? That's not by accident. I got news for you. Nothing that is said on commentary in this company is said by accident. So that's why I think he's coming back. But at SummerSlam, I think that would be ridiculous. I see no reason for it. Ric Flair. We're over an hour into the show. I haven't even mentioned one of the most famous, greatest wrestlers of all time almost died this week, and he's still not out of the woods yet. Although from what I have read here, he is doing much better now than he was a few days ago, which is great to hear. The Nature Boy was rushed to the hospital late last week. He was rushed. Now, when the rumors initially started that Ric Flair was in the hospital, his PR representative went on Twitter and said, no, it's just routine. It's routine checkup or something along those lines. Somehow we went from like a routine visit to Ric Flair being in the ICU in a medically induced coma. That is the very definition of that phrase. Well, that escalated quickly. And a lot of concern for Rick. It looked like, I mean, he was knocking on death's door. I mean, that's how bad things were and potentially still are. Organs were failing. I think his kidneys maybe weren't functioning properly. I think Dave Meltzer mentioned that he was on and may still be on kidney dialysis. They were trying to kickstart his kidneys to get them going again. Apparently, he was having a lot of pain in his abdomen. It turned out to be a bowel obstruction, which is not fun. I've never had one, but I know that can be very, very painful. And very, very life-threatening, if not taken care of quickly. So I guess it was a bowel obstruction. He had surgery to alleviate. I believe, my understanding is that it was surgery to alleviate that issue. Now, where this whole thing came, that it was colon surgery and Flair's fiance Wendy, went on Facebook and said, you know, I don't know where these things started. He did not have colon surgery. It was a different surgery. I think it started with Gene Okerlund, because Gene obviously is very good friends with Flair, and I don't know where he got that from, but it was Mean Gene who went on Twitter. Not a fan. This is not, you can't blame this on the fans in this case. This was Gene Okerlund who went on Twitter and obviously was misinformed. I mean, you know, it's a mistake. Mistakes happen. He wrote it as colon surgery. He said, you know, hopefully, you know, Flair's colon surgery went well. So that's where that came from. It was not colon surgery. It was probably surgery on for the bowel obstruction. But whatever surgery it was, he came through it. I believe now he's dealing with an infection. Again, I heard that he was on kidney dialysis, but he has an external pacemaker now. He's in rough shape. Flair is a mess. Flair is a mess. But the fact that he, according to his PR rep, was awake and communicating and was cutting a promo the other day on one of the nurses, that's a positive sign. That is good news. He is not out of the woods, but we came very, very close by all accounts. Even, you know, Michael Hayes said, I stopped by the hospital to see Rick, and believe me when I tell you that he needs all the prayers and positive, like everything that people were saying who would know Ric Flair, who were friends with Ric Flair, led you to believe that this guy was about to check out. It was a dire, dire situation. And he's got a long road ahead of him, but as of right now, he is doing much better, and that's great to hear. Flair is basically, whatever you may think of Flair, and there's a lot of things you could say about Ric Flair. Certainly, he's lived a hard lifestyle right up until his, you know, his 60s, really, with the drinking and everything and all that. But he's wrestling royalty. He really is, and he would be atop many people's list as the greatest overall, you know, professional wrestler between in-ring and promos and appearance, and just, he looks like a world champion. You know, when Bobby Roode came out at the NXT show last night, he came out in this beautiful robe, and I remember Roode telling a story once when he started wearing those robes. I think he got the idea, or he may have actually gotten his first robe that he used from Terry Taylor. But when I looked at Bobby Roode the other night when he made his entrance, it was classic Ric Flair. I mean, I'm not saying he was out there blatantly copying Ric, but he, you know, I thought of Ric Flair. The way he had his arms out, you know, the way he was kind of twirling, showing the robe itself, it was classic Ric Flair. Flair always carried himself and looked like a world champion. He looked the part. More than a lot of guys, frankly, do these days. He looked like a champion. And you guys know my feelings on the 1992 Royal Rumble. It's high comedy at this point. Flair was an integral part of that match. Came in at number three, lasted, you know, outlasted all the other guys, won the championship. Came in, probably was pushed harder than anyone else was from that NWA, WCW, you know, during that era when they would come over to WWE. Flair was treated just as a big star, the way he was in the NWA. He wasn't made to look like a fool. He was not, you know, brought in just to be beaten and embarrassed and jobbed out. He came in as a big star, and he won the championship just a few months into the company. And that 1992 Royal Rumble between Flair's performance and Bobby Heenan rooting him on commentary, and that's not fair to Flair, and practically having a heart attack and a nervous breakdown on the air, that probably is my fondest memory of Ric Flair. Obviously, the series with Steamboat and the feud with Sting, and I mean, the Four Horsemen era and the War Games matches. I mean, Flair has just been involved in so many unbelievable things in his career that if, you know, when that day comes that Flair is no longer with us, the retrospectives on his career, I mean, it's take your pick. My God, I mean, just the stuff that you can put into that. And there's an ESPN 30 for 30 on his life that's coming out. It was like an hour long, I think. It's, I think, due out in November, if I'm not mistaken. And we came very close to that becoming a memorial piece this past week, and thankfully that is not the case. So best wishes to him and his family. Obviously, Charlotte has been with her dad. She was not at TakeOver last night. She missed a whole bunch of appearances this past week. She will not be at SummerSlam, I wouldn't think. She's with her family, and all the best to Ric Flair. Hopefully we'll see him out on TV at some point in the future, strutting and cutting a promo on somebody. PW Insider broke the news this week that former WWE Tag Team and Intercontinental Champion Shelton Benjamin has officially signed to return to WWE. If this seems like deja vu, you are not mistaken in thinking that. Now, I think the way it worked last year was, I don't know that Shelton ever officially signed. Or if he did, it wasn't official until the medicals. That's basically the way it works. They send you, I think it's to Pittsburgh, you have this battery of medical tests and physical, and if everything checks out, you're good to go, you sign your contract, and you debut at some point. In his medicals, unbeknownst to him, it was discovered that he had suffered a torn rotator cuff. And so again, I don't know if they just rescinded the offer or if it just never then got to the point where he signed, but they started running vignettes for him on TV. So they were convinced he was coming in. In fact, he was going to SmackDown, right? That's not a rumor. that's a fact. We saw videos on SmackDown hyping his return coming soon. And then they discovered the torn rotator cuff and that he needed surgery. He suffered the injury. It was taken a suplex in a match in Pro Wrestling Noah. In Japan. I don't remember who it was with, but that's where he suffered the injury. Didn't know that he had the injury, had it operated on. Now, thankfully, they have extended a new offer for him to come back, and we'll see on TV this week, either if they start airing vignettes again, or maybe he'll show up. Maybe he'll be on SmackDown this Tuesday. But Shelton's getting a second chance. He's on his way back. That's very cool to see. You can easily plug him right into, you know, the U.S. title picture, the Intercontinental title picture. I have heard some people float the idea of maybe pairing him off with Chad Gable. You know, I don't doubt the two of them would make a fun tag team, but I kind of hate that in a way, because all you're doing is you're replacing one guy. Well, whatever. I mean, look, you can do that, but I'm not sold that that's necessarily the best thing to be doing. I think, Shelton would be a solid mid-card hand on either show, as Gable could be. I don't think you need to put them together necessarily as a tag team. Although it would make sense for Kurt Angle to want to recruit him to Raw. You know, that's one of the big differences, is that when Shelton was going to go to SmackDown, Kurt was not around. Now Kurt is the GM of Raw. And obviously, Shelton used to be a member of Team Angle. So guys like Gable, who have that Olympic background, guys like Shelton, who has a history with Kurt, you know, I know common sense is not a language that these people often speak, but it would make sense for Kurt to want to go after him and bring him to Raw. We'll see what happens. Speaking of Raw this past week, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I do want to make some comments. They were live from Boston, and I would say take a bow, Boston. Best Raw crowd in months and months here in Boston, Massachusetts. 73% thumbs up in our Twitter poll, only 27% thumbs down. That is with 2,400 votes, so pretty good score. Pretty good go-home show for Raw this past week. I thought it was a good show. I thought the build to the fist bump with Rollins and Ambrose at the beginning was very well done. Even the Sasha Banks-Nia Jax match I thought was good, and it helped, you know, doing the match in Sasha's hometown. The place was hot for it. She's a Boston girl, so of course she was over like Rover here in this match. And someone won in their hometown for a change. How about that? The right person won that match. Alexa Bliss, for some reason, was sitting in a lifeguard chair at ringside. I guess that was supposed to be a throne. I guess. They kept calling it a throne on commentary. They could have had her sitting out there on a toilet and still called it a throne. And there are some sick people out there who actually would have enjoyed that. But I'm just watching this thinking, do they not have the old Macho King throne? Remember the Macho King would come out on that throne? People would carry it to the ring. King Mabel, right? We've seen people use that throne. King Haku. We know that that thing is probably sitting in the warehouse, right? Or did they just not come up with this idea until 6 hours before showtime? That's probably the more likely answer. That's probably what it is. They didn't have enough time to transport the throne from Connecticut to Boston. Big Cass. Big Cass got a lot of heat on this show. Better to have heat on the show than have heat elsewhere, like his buddy Enzo, I suppose. But he got the most heat that he has ever gotten in his life from this crowd here in Boston. They gave him the night after WrestleMania, you know, you beat The Undertaker, we hate you, we hope you die treatment. That's what Cass got here. He could not even get a word in edgewise. Every time he would try to speak, the booing would intensify. He was smiling, he was laughing. You know, he was loving every second of this. And I thought he handled it pretty well. He was obviously enjoying himself. Enzo came out, he brought out the Big Show, and then he did what Enzo does, which is get booted in the face and laid out. Anderson and Gallows ran down, they ganged up with Cass on the Big Show. They sort of held Big Show still, and Cass broke Big Show's hand. There was a shark cage in the ring, and they basically slammed the door on Big Show's hand and broke it. Enzo keeps getting Big Show in all these problems. And somebody emailed me asking, will we see an Enzo Amore heel turn tonight at SummerSlam, maybe where he helps Big Cass win? And I don't know that it would make a whole lot of sense, given that he's getting his ass kicked every single week. But there are things that they've done that have made far less sense than that. So, you know, when it comes to pro wrestling, yeah, you could do that. Sure, why not? And I'll tell you something. The one guy who Enzo should be managing is Big Cass. They put themselves in a real pickle when they broke them up the way they did. But the one guy that it would really make sense to put Enzo with, because I've looked at both these rosters, okay? Even guys that could probably use the help, that could use somebody talking for them. Enzo doesn't really fit with any of them. He really doesn't. He does not fit with any of them, except Cass. How they would explain that, I'm sure it would be convoluted. But if they could find a way, go for it. I say do it. They did give away two SummerSlam matches on this show, which was dumb. But the Cruiserweight title match I thought with Neville and Tozawa was still really good. I love the tease of the Red Arrow at the end, which Neville has not really done in a long time. You know, he kind of goes for it, but then he ends up not doing it to get more heat. But he did it here, and he crashed and burned, and then the crowd began to buzz as Tozawa went up to the top rope. They know what's coming. He hits the jumping senton, and he becomes the first man to take the title from Neville. He proved that he was on the Neville level here in this match. That's my first big SummerSlam prediction come true, albeit 6 days early. And then the other match they did here on the show that they gave away was Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt. This one wasn't so good. I thought it was an average match. Bray won with Sister Abigail, then he poured a bucket of what the announcers referred to as a viscous, acidic liquid on Finn Balor. That's WWE speak for blood. But they can't say blood. They can't even say fake blood or pig's blood. Maybe it wasn't supposed to be blood. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was not meant to be blood. They called it acidic. I don't believe blood is all that acidic. Balor was sort of writhing around like somebody poured hot coffee on him. But still, a viscous acidic liquid. That's the term they came up for this. WWE.com had a write-up on this, and they actually referred to it as a viscous acidic red fluid. He poured a red fluid on Finn Balor. I'm actually relieved it was a red fluid. And not a different kind of fluid. That would be the far creepier side of Bray Wyatt that we don't need to see. I can't even say that without thinking of that one scene from The Silence of the Lambs. Anyway, Balor did a promo later on saying that if Bray has his demons, I've got a demon of my own. And the people cheered. Now, it would have been enough to just leave well enough alone, right? People knew what he meant by that, but subtlety is not WWE's specialty, so they put a graphic up later in the show, outright telling us that it's going to be Demon Balor against Bray Wyatt at SummerSlam. So, what? Yeah, there you go. Jason Jordan and the Hardy Boys beat Miz, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel. I thought that was a fun match, fun finish, with Jordan suplexing dudes all over the place, and then Jeff hitting the Swanton. I said months ago, when I first noticed it, I didn't hear anybody else mention this, but months ago I said, Jeff is landing on guys now full force. You know he's hurting. He's getting older. He's got to compensate in some ways. And you look at the Swanton bombs he would do when he was in WWE before and look at them now. Before, like, his head would barely graze the guy. He just doesn't give a fuck now. Now he just lands on them full force. And it makes the move actually look far more devastating than it did before. So that's what he did here. We then got a Paul Heyman promo and a big brawl to end the show with the four men in the Universal title match tonight. Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman were the last two standing. They got the place amped up when they were coming face to face. They wanted to see these two fight. Before they could touch, though, a bunch of security goofs broke them up. They did the deal where one guy breaks free and attacks, and then the other guy breaks free and attacks, and Kurt Angle called out the entire Raw mid-card and the Hardy Boys to come down and restrain the two of them. This was not the best brawl that I've ever seen. I've seen them do this in better ways before, but it did leave people wanting to see more at SummerSlam, especially between Brock and Braun. And so, you know, that should always be the goal of your go-home show, is to get people excited to see what's on the pay-per-view. And I think there was enough good stuff on this show on Monday night to warrant a thumbs up from me. I will say this much, in terms of the dueling shows, Raw versus SmackDown, Raw kicked SmackDown's ass this week. It's not even a contest what the better show was. SmackDown on Tuesday, I mentioned before, Raw won 73-27, I think, in the Twitter poll. Here, we had, again, 2,000 votes, 51% thumbs up for SmackDown, 49% thumbs down, almost an even 50-50 split. Not good. Not good for SmackDown. SmackDown used to routinely do 80-20, 90-10, you know, and then, you know, look, people blame Road Dogg, woof woof, it's his fault, who the fuck knows. But whoever's fault it is, SmackDown definitely has fallen a bit from where they were 2, 3, 4 months ago. Whoever is responsible, you know who's responsible for it? Vince McMahon is responsible. If you don't like SmackDown, if you think SmackDown is not as good, don't blame Road Dogg. Don't blame Michael Hayes. Don't blame Triple H. Blame Vince McMahon. It's his show. Nothing makes the air without his approval. He could very easily look at this show and say, this is shit. Change it. But he doesn't. So I don't think SmackDown is shit, but a lot of people do. But I'm just saying, put the blame where it belongs. That's all I'm saying. It was not a great show. And it had one of the more mind-boggling moves that they have made in a very long time. They had Baron Corbin cash in his Money in the Bank contract after the John Cena-Jinder Mahal match. And he lost in about 10 seconds on a distraction roll-up, of all things. My favorite finish. Speaking of my favorite finish, do you know, I saw this on IGN, do you know that in an effort to make the WWE 2K18 game as realistic as possible, they have added a new feature called the Quick Pin, where you can hit a roll-up and end a match quickly, just like they do on TV. They have a whole bunch of new, like, match interference scenarios, they have run-ins, somebody's entrance music will play, and it will lead to a distraction and the quick pin. And then, after the match, the loser can beat down the person who got the fluke win. This is legitimate. I am not making this up. This is in the game now. They have incorporated it into the game. So now, all of these crappy finishes on TV, you can now recreate them on your own. So let's backtrack, shall we? Okay, we had a main event on the show of John Cena versus Jinder Mahal and what they billed at different points in the show as, quote, the biggest. That's what they called it at first. They said the biggest main event in SmackDown history. Then later on, they said one of the biggest main events in SmackDown history. Both of which are lies, by the way. He said this, Tom Phillips did, I assume, with a straight face. Now, maybe they meant SmackDown Live, not SmackDown like going back to 1999. Maybe they meant SmackDown Live. And you know what? Then yes. If you only count the last 12 months, maybe you can make that argument. Even that's a stretch. John Cena versus Jinder Mahal in a non-title match, mind you, isn't even the biggest SmackDown main event in the last 2 months. Right off the top of my head, I could think of Cena Nakamura was a far bigger match. And even they had a Money in the Bank match, for God's sake. They had a Women's Money in the Bank ladder match as the main event on SmackDown within the last couple of months. So you are not going to convince me that a non-title match between John Cena and Jinder Mahal is anything but a match. That's all it is. But I digress. They had an Indian Independence Day celebration on the here at the beginning of the show with Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers. I enjoyed the dancing and all that kind of stuff. The crowd in Boston clearly did not. I guess because, you know, Merca, I don't know. Nakamura interrupted and said that in Japan, today is a day where they honor those who have died in war and they pray for peace. And he was cheered. And I said this on Wade Keller's show when we talked on Tuesday night. We've come a long way in this company In one way, at least. In some ways, we have not come very far at all. But in this way, we have come a long way. 10 years ago, even. Let alone like 20, 25, 30 years ago. Even a decade ago. You never would have seen a guy from India, okay, or Canada, pretending to be from India, wrestling a guy from Japan for the WWE Championship, let alone have the crowd cheer for the Japanese guy. You just would not have seen that. So in that respect, that's an improvement. Tamina and Lana, they're clearly doing a story now where Lana, I guess, is going to be managing Tamina. To be honest with you, if they're taking Lana out of the ring and making her a manager, then that's the best move they could make. I don't know why they ever split her away from Rusev. If she wanted to wrestle, why couldn't she wrestle and still be with Rusev? Explain that to me. She didn't have to come out with Rusev for every single match, maybe just for the key matches. But if they only split them up just because she wanted to wrestle, and I don't buy that, they probably split them up just to fuck with them. But there was never any reason to split them up. So now it looks like she's going to go back to managing, but now she's going to take Tamina under her wing. In fact, she tweeted out, she said, "I took Rusev to the top, now I'll make history by being the first woman to manage another woman and take Tamina to the top." And I thought about that, and I actually could not think of another situation, at least on the main roster like that, where you had a female manager or a female valet managing another female. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of one. So that is unique. We are talking about Tamina here, so I don't expect much from this. But for Lana, just to get her out of the ring, I'm all for it. Rusev and Chad Gable had a rematch. I saw the graphic. I was like, okay, cool. I'm all down for this. I mean, I really would rather see this as SummerSlam, but what the hell. And then they had about a 90-second match, if you could even call it that, where Rusev just beat the piss out of him. This was all just to, you know, make Rusev look dominant going into the match with Randy Orton at SummerSlam, so... Gable was sort of the sacrificial lamb. I hated that. That aspect of it I hated. After the match, I will say Randy Orton hit an RKO out of nowhere on Rusev. That was kind of cool. But I just wish they didn't have to use Gable the way they did here. What are you going to do? I just wish he wasn't used here in that situation. But Orton and Rusev is the match at the pay-per-view, so I get why they did it. We had a segment with Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, and AJ Styles. There was, you know, Owens shoved AJ, and Styles went to punch Owens, and Owens ducked, and then he almost hit Shane. Okay, this is the second time now that Styles almost hit Shane. He hit him the first time. He actually kicked him. But he held up, didn't hit him, and they got into an argument. They're arguing back and forth. Owens goes for a super kick to AJ Styles. Styles ducks, and he nails Shane. So again, back and forth we go. I've enjoyed the build-up to this match. They had to do something. Now they've created a situation where you don't know if Shane is going to show favoritism one way or the other. I still say AJ retains, and Owens freaks out and has a match with Shane at the next pay-per-view. The Usos beat Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods of New Day in a non-title match, since the match tonight is Xavier and Big E against the Usos on the kickoff show. So here's another match that technically they gave away. I mean, I know Big E will be in this one, but still, they did Usos and New Day on TV. So yet another SummerSlam match here this week. What does that make? The third one, I think, given away here 5 or 6 days before the pay-per-view. They had a Fashion Peaks, possibly the final Fashion Peaks segment. I take it that when Fandango and Tyler Breeze are back on TV in a couple of weeks, they may move on to maybe spoofing another TV show. But this was the final Fashion Peaks. I enjoy these. They're just a guilty pleasure for me. The Ascension was involved again, as they usually are. And anyway, this ended with a graphic that said that they would be back. Breezango, that is, would return in 25 years. And people sort of booed. And then it faded out and it faded back. And it said, actually, it's like 2 weeks. And the crowd cheered wildly. They were so happy to see that these guys were going to be back in 2 weeks. I guess that means we don't have to watch SmackDown this week, since they're not going to be back until the following Tuesday. But seriously, these two have become maybe the most consistently entertaining thing about this show. And it's nice to see the fans kind of take to them the way they have. Fandango's a guy who was on the bubble for a long time. right? There were people who probably forgot he was even still employed by the company. Wasn't even being used. Tyler Breeze showed a lot of promise in NXT. You guys know I was a big Tyler Breeze fan and proponent for a long time. He came up, got a quick push against Dolph Ziggler. That fizzled out after a few weeks. And it seemed that, you know, he was going down the Fandango freeway. And now the two of them have found new life together. I heard they mentioned on their Talk Is Jericho appearance that John Cena and Nikki Bella are big fans of theirs. I'm thinking Southpaw Regional Wrestling may have a lot to do with that. By the way, the new season has dropped. It is on YouTube and WWE.com. I think it's a collection of six short episodes, which is not nearly enough. I have not watched it yet. I just haven't had time. I literally have not had any time. I want to be able to sit down and relax and watch each one. Hopefully I'll do that in the next couple of days. I did hear that Big Bartholomew is nowhere to be found on season two of Southpaw Regional. Please tell me that is not true. I would be very disappointed if we don't get some Big Bartholomew on this season of Southpaw. It would be an absolute travesty if he is not on that show. Then we come to one of the biggest, most gigantic, stupendous, ginormous, unbelievable main events in SmackDown history. See, did I sell that enough for you? John Cena versus Jinder Mahal in a non-title match. Mahal went for the Coloss. Cena countered, hit an AA. Jinder kicked out. That's how you know you've made it, when they let you kick out of an AA. Cena hit a super AA off the top rope, seemingly had the match won, when Baron Corbin ran in for the DQ. He hit Cena with the briefcase. He went to go leave, and then he had a change of thought. He rushed back into the ring, and of course, people are all excited. We get to see a cash-in. Yay! They're all very happy about this. And the way they were drawing this out, because the referee was waiting for Jinder to get up to his feet, and Corbin is standing there, he's waiting and waiting and waiting, and the way they were dragging it out, I thought that they were just going to have Cena hit Corbin before the bell could ring. Because remember, until the bell rings, the cash-in is not official. So I thought for sure that's what they were doing here. But nope, bell rang once Jinder got up, and it was officially a match. And as soon as that happened, Corbin immediately turned around because Cena had climbed back up onto the apron. Cena got knocked off the apron, okay? So Corbin turns around, knocks him off the apron. In doing so, he took his eyes off the Maharaja. And Mahal rolled him up and pinned him in 10 seconds. Just like that. Baron Corbin was furious. John Cena was hysterical laughing outside the ring. And I didn't see it at the time, but some woman in the front row flipped him off right to his face. She must have been a big Baron Corbin fan, I guess. They took the Money in the Bank briefcase for 2017 and had the person lose it in 10 seconds. 6 days before the pay-per-view on a distraction roll-up finish. And with that, Baron Corbin joins a very elite club. He becomes one of only three men in history to have cashed in Money in the Bank and failed. John Cena and Damian Sandow are the other two. Oddly enough, all three failures involved John Cena in some way. Cena cashed in and lost his own briefcase. Sandow cashed in on Cena and lost. And here, Cena cost Corbin the briefcase. So the moral of the story is, Carmella needs to stay the hell away from John Cena. Now, I've seen a lot of, you know, comments from people on Twitter and Facebook, and I got a couple of emails about this. Wouldn't it have made sense for John Cena to help Baron Corbin? Why would he want to see Baron Corbin lose? Wouldn't he get the championship match at SummerSlam? And sure, that's why Stone Cold went off on Bret Hart. Remember on that famous night where Bret lost the cage match to Psycho Sid and snapped? Remember that? Remember, it could have been you and me for the championship, but you blew the whole damn thing because you're a loser. Remember Austin up on the Titantron? It almost sounds like he was talking directly to Corbin, doesn't it? But WWE could have just as easily said, look, and this is why I'm not really like, I don't care about this. That doesn't upset me, because they could have easily turned around and said, look, Nakamura beat Cena to earn the championship shot only a couple of weeks ago. And just make it Nakamura, Baron Corbin, and do John Cena and Jinder in a rematch to get a decisive winner. That actually would have been the more logical thing to do. So it's not a foregone conclusion that, oh my God, they're so stupid, because John Cena, in theory, should have wanted him to win. Yeah, okay, maybe, but they could have easily done it the other way. Maybe Cena thought, well, if Corbin cashes in, then I don't get to face Corbin. Now I face Jinder, and it's going to be Nakamura getting the title shot, which it really should be. That would make more sense. Nakamura just pinned Cena clean, fair and square, a couple of weeks ago. He should get the championship match regardless of who the champion is. That would be the logical thing to do. So Cena not helping Corbin, it didn't upset me as much as it did other people. It upset me so little that I didn't even think to bring it up. I didn't even mention it when I did the show with Keller. That's how little I was thinking about it. As far as my thoughts on them doing the cash-in, I thought it was hysterical. I laughed at first, just the absurdity of it. But I have mixed emotions about it. Because on the one hand, I think it was incredibly stupid to waste the Money in the Bank. Not like I'm a big Baron Corbin fan. I actually give the guy more credit than most people do. I've heard him speak like a normal person on Talking Smack and do promos there and actually sound a lot better than he does when he's doing some of this fourth hokey shit on TV. You know, and as a wrestler, I don't think he's bad. I mean, is he exciting? Is he this exciting, dynamic performer? Of course not, but he's not a bad wrestler. You know, and so I don't shit on him the way other people do. He wouldn't be my choice to be champion. But I'm more offended by just them wasting the briefcase the way they did. But I also don't agree with this notion that, well, Corbin's dead. He's buried. People love using that word, man. He is buried 6 feet under. They gave up on... I'm not convinced of that. In fact, I think he's beating John Cena tonight. I think we have to wait until tonight and see what happens. We have to take a wait-and-see approach on this, because if he loses tonight, then that's a different story. Then something's going on here. Something more than just, hey, let's shake things up and do something unpredictable. If he loses to John Cena tonight after what happened on Tuesday, then yeah, there's something going on there. He's in the doghouse. Something must have happened. But I look at it and I say to myself, there's no evidence of this. This guy has been all over this show now for weeks and weeks and weeks. In fact, they just gave him new music. He just got new theme music. And I know it seems like a superficial thing, but that doesn't happen unless they have plans for the guy. They're not putting that much thought and effort into this person and into his entrance unless they have something in mind for him. So let's wait until tonight. I'm picking him over Cena. And if he does beat Cena, then it was just something that they wanted to do, I guess, to shake things up a little bit. Maybe they didn't want to make the... they didn't want to have people with their head turned looking at the aisle during the Nakamura-Mahal match tonight waiting for Corbin to come out and cash in. Maybe that's why they did it. But I don't think it necessarily means Corbin is dead or he's got heat or they're pissed at him because he was tweeting with Meltzer or some bullshit. I don't think that has anything to do with it. And in fact, I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be just... Does he look like an idiot for now? Yeah, he does look like an idiot for allowing himself to be rolled up in 10 seconds after Mahal had just wrestled a match against John Cena. Yeah, it does not make him look all that great. But at the same time, it does not mean the end of Baron Corbin. And now, it's time to say something nice about Impact.
Say something nice about Impact.
Alberto El Patron was stripped of his GFW title earlier this week and remains suspended. So, yes, the very first ever unified GFW heavyweight champion's reign comes to an end at the hands of legendary future Hall of Famer Vacant. It was the right move to make. Good on Impact for making it, or Anthem, or GFW, whatever the fuck they want to call themselves. This is the official statement that they put out. It said, GFW has concluded its internal consideration of the events surrounding the suspension of Alberto El Patron. While it is apparent that initial reports unfairly characterize El Patron's involvement in the incident in the Orlando airport, we are nonetheless disappointed with the manner in... And they misspelled manner, by the way. M-A-N-O-R. My God. With the manner in which he dealt with this situation. We expect more decorum from all on the GFW roster, especially the world champion. Yeah, you don't say. We have communicated with El Patron our decision to strip him of the championship title. So I guess they can't say belt here in this company either. No decision has been taken or make... No decision has been taken, that's what they said, as to the date on which he will be reinstated to the roster, the conditions of which are a private matter between the company and El Patron. So, you know, we can poke little fun at them here and there, but again, right decision to make. Never should have been champion in the first place, but it was the right decision to make, even though the Orlando incident. As it turned out, you know, Paige was the one who I guess was, you know, fingered for assaulting him and not the other way around. Even still, they have enough sense to keep him suspended while they figure out what the hell to do with this guy, because they know that he's a liability to their company. For all the good that he could do them, whether it's in Mexico or even here in this country, look, he's a guy who has had a lot of success here in the States, who, when his head is screwed on tightly, when his head is screwed on the right way, I think could actually be a big asset to a company, whether it's GFW or WWE. But clearly his head is not screwed on tightly, and he has made a fool out of himself more often than not. He has made a fool out of this company. And it was the right move for them to make. Now, El Patron released his own statement on Instagram shortly after GFW put their statement out. This is what El Patron said, okay? He said, "My company, Impact, and I have come to an agreement that it's best for both parties if I be stripped from the championships. I came up with the suggestion just to show that Impact doesn't have favorites and everybody gets treated the same. Apologies to fans and my brothers and sisters in the company. Even though I came out all clear and there was no wrongdoing, it was still a scandal. So thanks for your support, and let's move forward more positively. One day I hope to be your champ again. #CCC. The fact that he claims it was his suggestion for them to strip him of the championship is very interesting, considering the wording in the GFW statement, which says that they communicated to Alberto their decision to strip him of the title. This whole, like, it was my idea for them to strip me stuff just doesn't pass the smell test with me. Especially when the guy was cleared of any wrongdoing in the airport incident. I don't buy that he's suddenly concerned with how he might reflect on GFW if they kept the title on him. Like, this is the same guy who, after every single show, would get on the microphone to talk about WWE. Couldn't shut up about WWE. So I don't buy that. But good on GFW for making the right call, whoever suggestion it may have been. Ultimately, it was their call to make, and they made the right one.
Say something nice about Impact.
Now, there was a lot of other Impact news, GFW news this week. Some of this that I'm going to get into here is a little spoilerish. Actually, very much so spoilerish. So if you don't want to hear about any of this, skip ahead by 3 or 4 minutes. But Johnny Mundo from Lucha Underground is now with GFW. He closed the show. It was a video package, I guess, that closed the show on Thursday, teasing his debut as Johnny Impact, the Thursday Night Delight. They did mention that he was both the AAA and Lucha Underground champion. This worries me. This worries me a lot about Lucha Underground as a Lucha Underground fan. Because I've heard conflicting things. I've heard, well, it's nothing to worry about because Jeff Jarrett forged a working relationship with AAA, and these guys are AAA talent. Just, you know, even more than Lucha Underground talent. And so it doesn't necessarily mean things are bad with Lucha Underground. But as long as they're under contract to AAA, then they can work GFW shows. Okay, I'll take your word for it, but that doesn't really make me feel all that much better. Because my understanding is that they've had the working relationship for a while now with AAA. This is the first time we're seeing a real influx of Lucha Underground talent working GFW shows. You know, we saw Drago and I think Phoenix and pretty recently working one of the TNA shows, and now we have Johnny Mundo's debuting. Rey Mysterio may be gone as well if the rumors are true about him being close to signing with GFW, and he would be gone. If Rey ends up in GFW, that's not a case of, well, he's a Lucha guy, you know, Lucha Underground guy being used by GFW. No, he may be on his way in to sign with GFW. And so I saw the image that Tejano tweeted the other day backstage at Impact, so I guess now he's there. Again, is it part of the working relationship, or what the hell is going on with Lucha Underground? All I know is I see all these Lucha Underground guys popping up in GFW. Good for them. These are talented guys, but that worries me a lot. And it would help if they would make a friggin' announcement already about what the hell is going on with Season 4, if there's even going to be a Season 4. And the longer, the more days and weeks that go by that they say nothing, it just, you know, as a fan of the show, it makes me worry that much more. And I can only imagine what the wrestlers must feel like, because unless they've been told and they've done a really good job of not leaking it to anybody, they're probably as much in the dark as we are about what the hell's going on with a possible Season 4. So, you know, Lucha Underground's potential loss here, if that's what this is a big gain for GFW. especially when it comes to Mundo. Mundo's very talented. Mundo's one of those guys that WWE dropped the ball on big time and never should have let go. For him, though, it's paid off because, again, he's been able to build a body of work for himself outside WWE that's very impressive. I'm sure they'd love to have him back. And good for him that he doesn't feel that he has to go back there. You know, he's able to kind of do his own thing. I respect that. I respect that a lot. Jim Cornette made his debut in GFW on Thursday. He came out to, quote, fire Bruce Pritchard. And I guess Cornette now is the de facto babyface authority figure on the show, although he's not considered the GM or the commissioner or the president or anything like that. I guess he claims he is a corporate representative, and he works directly for Anthem, and that he has signed nothing with GFW itself. That's my understanding. And that's a shoot. That's not like the TV angle. My understanding is that, from what I read anyway, Cornette has told people that he is not like a GFW employee. This is a deal he made with Anthem, and that's the current arrangement as it stands. He announced a gauntlet match for the TV show coming up this Thursday, with the winner becoming the new GFW champion in light of El Patron being stripped. And again, for those of you who do not want to be spoiled, skip ahead. The new Global Force Wrestling Champion of the World is Eli Drake, which I think is a great move. If you remember, Eli Drake, back when he was working in... he never even really made his debut in NXT, as Sean Ricker. But he was signed to developmental in WWE, never really did make his debut. He was also on that Rock's reality show, The Hero, on TNT. But I raved about this guy back then. In fact, I did one of the prediction shows at the beginning of the year. This would have been in 2015, maybe? 2015, 2016? I don't know if 2014 might have been too early. But it was one of those years, and I did my annual prediction show at the beginning of the year. And I said one of the NXT, developmental names to watch out for who could be called up this year, or at least, you know, make his debut on NXT television, was Sean Ricker. And he never did. Supposedly he had heat because he was tweeting stuff. He was full of himself. There were a bunch of excuses. He got cut. And it never made any sense to me because he looks the part. The guy, you know, he looks like a star. And, as a wrestler, he's a fine wrestler. And I think he's even the final guy that Percy Pringle, Paul Bearer, before he passed away, he was managing him, I think, back in like Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and spoke highly of him, and I saw big things in his future, and then he got cut. But Impact picked him up, and now he's the champion. And if it were up to me, I mean, my thought was I would have probably gone with EC3. But either way, you want to go with a homegrown guy as your champion. You don't just want to put the title on the next guy that gets cut from WWE or quits WWE. Hey, Jack Swagger's free. Let's put the title on him. Hey, Jack Swagger's a talented guy. Jack Swagger should not be the Global Force champion. Let him earn it the way everybody else has to on TV. So they really had to go with a homegrown guy. EC3 or Drake, you can't go wrong with either one of them. And I think it's a positive move for Global Force. And finally, a lot of moves happening this week. They're also taping like 12 weeks worth of television, I think, over the next several days. So there's going to be a lot more news probably leaking out about these tapings. But the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro, has been working as an announcer now for some time for TNA, then Impact, and now GFW. My God, this company has had more name changes than Sean Combs. It's ridiculous. Anyway, he announced his departure from the company on Instagram, which is where all important announcements apparently are made these days. Instagram or Snapchat. So the Pope is gone. And really, can you blame the guy? I mean, I would leave too if I had to sit next to Josh Matthews every week. And that's all your GFW news here for the week. Again, I have not yet had a chance to watch Lucha Underground, so I have no Lucha Underground review for you this week, but I'll definitely be catching up on that in the next few days, and we'll get back to normal next week. I have no mailbag for you this week either, so I apologize for that. We'll get back to normal next week. It's been a crazy weekend for me. I have not even had time to go through a lot of my emails. But what I want to do here at the end of the show before I leave you guys is play some of the audio from my interviews on the red carpet at the WWE 2K18 launch party Friday night in New York City. It was a great time. They had Snoop Dogg come out later on and perform. I got video of all of this stuff. And what I'm going to do is the full audio from each of the interviews I did. And the interviews ranged anywhere from like you know, 2 minutes to maybe 4 minutes. They're not terribly long. Think of the interviews I did last year with Nakamura and Miz and AJ Styles and Sasha. I got to talk to them in Charlotte last year. It's very similar to that. But it was very cool last year. It was very cool this year to be able to talk to, especially Kurt Angle. I was really hoping he would be there. I thought he would be because he's in the video game commercial. But I had the chance to talk to the Raw GM and a bunch of other people. And so I'm going to play some of that audio for you now and leave you with this. And I will get a video up in the next couple of days up on the YouTube channel. It will be a Sound Off and SE Scoops exclusive. It will be up on the Sound Off YouTube channel at youtube.com/thesolomonster. So now would be a good time to go subscribe because you're going to get that video in the next few days and you're going to get my SummerSlam review sometime on Monday. So definitely hop on there and hit the subscribe button if you have not already done so. But I will work to edit that video with all the interviews I did and all the footage and get that up ASAP. For now, enjoy these audio interviews from the WWE 2K18 launch party this past Friday night here in New York. And I will see you at SummerSlam tonight at the Barclays Center. So until next time, be well, stay safe. And here are my interviews with the WWE superstars. Enjoy. Jason here with WWE Hall of Famer Kurt Angle. Kurt, let me ask you this. You've been back in the company now for a few months. What differences do you notice in the company now as compared to when you were last there?
They run a tighter ship. They cater to their athletes a lot more from a nutritional standpoint to a health standpoint to a drug testing standpoint to a fitness and wellness standpoint, passing physicals. It's a lot more difficult now, and I commend WWE for that. When I was there, you know, at the beginning of my career, there was no drug testing policy. There was barely a fitness or a physical that you had to pass. So they've come a long way, and they really have been successful in protecting their athletes and making sure they have a nice long life, you know, after wrestling.
I would imagine, you know, being around a lot of the younger guys now probably gives you a little bit of the itch maybe to come back. If I were to say to you, WrestleMania next year, ideal situation for you, who might you like to see yourself in the ring with?
Well, there are a bunch of guys. I have to admit, I was one of the best when I was, you know, wrestling back here in the mid-2000s, but there's a huge roster right now. It's the most talented roster I've seen ever. But I would throw guys like Brock Lesnar, Triple H, John Cena, which I've already wrestled, Randy Orton. But the new guys, Finn Balor, love Bray Wyatt, Cesaro, Sheamus. I'd also like to mix it up with AJ Styles again, but in a WWE ring, and Samoa Joe.
I'm here with the monster among men. You are a gigantic man, if I may say so. This is your first SummerSlam in terms of being in the main event. You are in the Fatal 4-Way on Sunday for the championship. It's been a pretty quick rise for you from where you were to where you are now. What's that been like for you, going, you know, pretty much from 0 to 60 in a pretty short amount of time?
You know, WWE decided to finally take the chains off me and let me show the world what I'm capable of doing. And I've only shown you guys but a glimpse of what the monster is able to do. So, I mean, it's a crazy thing for me to think about that almost 2 years to the day I debuted on Monday Night Raw, 2 years later I'm the main event of SummerSlam. If my work ethic doesn't speak for itself right there, I don't know what to tell you.
Anybody backstage, behind the scenes, who has been a great influence on you so far in your time on the main roster?
Without a doubt, the biggest influence backstage to me has got to be Big Show. He's taken me under his wing. We have a joke in the locker room that he's my wrestling dad and I'm his wrestling son. So, yeah, he's always let me know when I do something that stinks, and he lets me know when I do something that's good. And you can tell that it's worked out because this year him and I have had two unbelievable bouts, one where we collapsed the ring. And I'm going to go out on a limb, like I've told a few of the people tonight, you'll never see anything like what Big Show and I have done this year because there are no more men like us in this world.
Here with the former Raw Women's Champion, Bayley. I'm sure this is a bittersweet weekend for you.
Yeah.
Any update on the injury?
I just had my second day of physical therapy today, which is amazing because this guy, like, you can see the bruising. He, like, did the scraping, which breaks down all the tissues and the muscles and stuff. So it's actually been nice to kind of, like, move my arm. Like, I haven't been able to put my own hair up or to work out or anything, so it's kind of nice to do that. I know it's still going to – I have, like, a long road a little bit. I'm lucky there's no surgery or anything like that, but it's pretty painful going through the physical therapy, which I wasn't expecting it to be. I know it's mentally messing with me, and it's kind of, I wish I was wrestling on Sunday, but I don't know. I'll be okay. I got to get through it.
Any timetable for a return?
I'm not sure. They told me it could be a couple months. It could be a few months, but I'm kind of like hoping. I'm getting reevaluated, I think, like in a month or so to kind of see where I'm at. And I'm hoping there I can get the green light, but I don't know.
You know, the Mae Young Classic is coming up right around the corner. Any favorites? Anybody that you have an eye on in the tournament that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I have tons of favorites. I have a lot of friends in there, so it was very cool to watch. I was there both days. There's a few people that I didn't know before. There's a chick named Piper who just blew my mind. I think she's from Scotland or something. She was amazing. So definitely look out for her. I love Dakota Kai, Kaylee Ray, Serena Deeb, who is one of my, you know, my mentors coming in on the independents. Everybody, man. It's really good. It's really exceeded all my expectations.
We've heard some rumors about horse women against horse women, and yeah. I mean, what's going on there?
Well, they were there, and we were there. So, well, Sasha wasn't. But I know Shayna was in the tournament, and she's very impressive. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. If something were to happen, I'd be fully acceptable. I would accept it, you know. I'm not scared.
I'm here with WWE Champion Jinder Mahal. Jinder, when you came back to WWE last year, did you envision yourself being in the position that you're in right now heading into SummerSlam?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm in this position. You know, you don't just become WWE Champion by accident. Ever since returning from WWE, it's my goal. Actually, I used to tell Vince McMahon, like right when I came back, I told him I'm going to improve week by week, and someday this place is going to be mine. I'm going to have the keys to the kingdom. And I was very fortunate enough where WWE is a place where they reward hard work. I became number one contender and ultimately WWE champion.
How has your relationship changed, if at all, with Vince McMahon from before to now?
No, it's changed drastically. Before, I used to kind of avoid Vince. I was intimidated by him. He is, after all, a very intimidating guy. But now I have a very good relationship with Vince. He's actually very cool. Like, he wants to see us succeed, because when we succeed, ultimately WWE succeeds. So, I'm very fortunate he's very hands-on with me. Like, when I come back from my match or my promo, Vince is the first person that I come and talk to.
What has changed? I mean, obviously, you know, we've seen footage of you training in the gym and really working hard. I mean, what changes have you made? Because the transformation in a lot of ways has been very drastic. So what was the difference between Jinder Mahal then as opposed to Jinder Mahal now?
The most important thing that changed is my attitude. Mentally, I've changed. Just I'm just a lot more positive. And I know that you get back what you put in. I know that if I put in 100%, I get back 100% back out. Actually, another thing that I started to do is I write down my goals. So as of the new year, every day I would write down. I kind of messed up because I would write down become a champion in WWE. I didn't write become WWE champion. I aimed kind of low. I was hoping like IC champ or US champion. But if you put it on paper, I promise you, man, it's good things start to happen. You start moving in that direction.
Now, speaking of champions, you know, in NXT tomorrow night, we have Drew Galloway, Drew McIntyre, challenging for the NXT championship. You and him go way back.
Yep.
What do you think of his comeback to WWE? Because he also had to go through a lot of trials to get to where he is.
Exactly. We both had our ups and downs. He, just like myself, debuted in WWE at a young age, and maybe it was a little bit too much too soon. And well, we both were released at the same time, and we both came back. And we both have a huge chip on our shoulder. We have something to prove. And he's refocused just like I am, and really, sky's the limit for Drew. I know definitely he is going to hold this championship. Hopefully it's a Universal Championship.
Well, I was going to say, you know, maybe one day WrestleMania match.
You know what? That's funny. Little story. Drew the other day was going for like an alligator tour or something in Florida. And I had texted him like, hey, man, be careful. We have a WrestleMania and a main event someday. Yeah, true story.
Here with NXT champion Bobby Roode. Defends his championship tomorrow night. Bobby, you've been on top in NXT since the beginning of the year. What has your experience in NXT been like after so many years outside of the WWE family?
You know, it's been a really gratifying year for me. To be welcomed into this company and to the NXT locker room the way I have for the last year and a half has been really cool, and to be kind of looked upon as a guy with a lot of experience and kind of a locker room leader is cool. But at the same time, I've been able to you know, learn from a lot of people as well. You know, I'm, in this business, you always continue to learn every day. And that's one of the best things about being in NXT. There's so many great minds available, you know, down at the PC, at the Performance Center in Orlando. The coaching staff, Matt Bloom and his coaching staff are phenomenal, very hands-on. Guys like Triple H, I mean, Triple H has his finger on the pulse at all times. So it's been really cool to work along with him as well. And I've been fortunate enough to work with Shawn Michaels over the last 6 months. As you know, he's taken a bit of a role in NXT too. So it's kind of like getting your PhD in professional wrestling when you sit in a room with him. So
is it a case where you like where you are, you're comfortable where you are? Do you have aspirations in the near future to want to move up to Raw or SmackDown?
Well, you know, it's funny because I get that question a lot, but I one of my goals since coming to NXT is to kind of get NXT to that same level, the same playing field as a Raw or a SmackDown Live. You know, I really don't feel like, you know, NXT is a lower brand. I really feel like we've almost reached that level. You know, it's a very popular brand. I think it's the hottest brand under the WWE umbrella. You know, and I would love for one day very soon for NXT to be able to do live television. You know, and maybe that's the next level we take this to. I don't know. But to be the face of a brand, to be the champion, and especially be able to walk in tomorrow night to, you know, what is, as Triple H put it, you know, it's the WrestleMania for NXT, you know, just take over tomorrow night in Brooklyn. So to be able to walk into the main event as champion on that show is a big moment for me.
Is there anybody in NXT or on the main roster that you would want to step in the ring with at some point? Maybe a favorite opponent?
I mean, there's a lot of guys. There's a laundry list of guys, you know, when you think about Raw and SmackDown that I've never been in the ring with. So to narrow it down to one, obviously, a guy that I would love to have a moment with would be John Cena.
I'm here with the women's champion, Alexa Bliss, heading into SummerSlam, defending her championship against Sasha Banks. Not your original opponent. Any disappointment that you're not facing Bayley as originally expected?
I mean, obviously, I do feel bad that Bayley is injured. You know, I wish we could have had a match. You know, I've had some of my best matches with Bayley in NXT. You know, I love having matches with Bayley, but, you know, Sasha and I have been given this platform, and she's tried to take my title from me multiple times, hasn't succeeded, and I don't plan SummerSlam should be any different. I plan on leaving SummerSlam with this title still on my shoulder.
Now, you are the first woman to hold the Raw Women's title and the SmackDown Women's title. A lot of success in a relatively short period of time. What's that been like for you?
Oh, it's been amazing. You know, I've been given so many opportunities with WWE. Super grateful for that. I couldn't have asked for a better year, you know, going into my first WrestleMania as SmackDown Women's Champion, going into my first singles SummerSlam as Raw Women's Champion. And it's just been an amazing year, and, like, I could not have asked for a better year. WWE has been amazing.
Anybody in the Mae Young Classic coming up that you've got your eye on or that you're familiar with that you like to mix it up with one day?
Ooh.
32 to choose from.
I know. I went on the second day of the Mae Young Classic. You know, I'm terrible with names, but there was a blonde. She had the little top hat and the jacket. She was a badass. Of course, I'd like to face Ember Moon, which I know she wasn't really in the classic. Macy Estrella, but I'm not sure what her in-ring name is.
We'll call her Macy Estrella.
Okay.
Have you played the new WWE game yet, 2K18? If so, what do you think?
Well, I saw Woods playing it. I mean, he wouldn't let anyone else play
it.
Yeah, he was playing it backstage. Bayley was playing it. She was playing against the Mojo, AJ Styles, which was really cool. And, like, the graphics were amazing. Everything looked so realistic and lifelike. And I'm super excited to go and play and, you know, see what it's all about.
One last note I wanted to quickly just tack this on here before we end, because I didn't have a chance to mention it before. Of all the people I interviewed, they were all very nice. All of them were very nice. Some spent more time talking to people than others. The one guy who I have to say was very chill, very laid back, very cool to talk to of the bunch was Jinder Mahal. And, you know, you guys know that I, you know, I'm pitching for Nakamura to win the championship, and I haven't been sold at all on this Jinder Mahal title reign as being anything long term. It's kind of run its course with me, but I will, and I still, you know, am predicting Nakamura to win and kind of hoping that they go in that direction. But I don't see how, after listening to him speak in this interview and other interviews that he's done and some of the video pieces, that you could want to see this guy fail. I certainly didn't come away from this wanting to see him fail. I wanted to see him succeed and continue to do well, even when he loses the championship, which he will at some point. I mean, whether it's tonight, whether it's at WrestleMania, you know, there will come a point in the not-too-distant future where Jinder Mahal no longer has the WWE title. But I will say it was very cool for him. You know, there he is carrying the title around. you could see the smile on his face. You could see how proud he was of that. And also just taking extra time to talk to people and take photos and all that kind of stuff. He's really very clearly enjoying his run on top, however long it's going to last. He's very confident in himself. That much was very obvious. And even just making small chat, you know, I was with Webmaster Mike and we brought up, hey, what gym were you working at earlier today? And he got all excited. He's like, oh man, I was working at this old school gym called Frenchie's. And they did a whole video on me training that should be up on .com. I haven't checked. I don't even know if the video is up. But he was all excited about it and said it's the same gym that Hulk Hogan and Mr. T went to when they shot footage of them training for the first WrestleMania. Just a very cool guy. And, you know, I hope he's able to continue this run that he's got, you know, with the Singh brothers and I almost feel like him holding that U.S. title, I really do almost feel like him holding that U.S. title would be almost a more appropriate thing. And that may well happen. When that day comes that he loses the WWE title, he may end up going after the United States Championship and maybe getting more heat for it. I don't know. But I certainly did not come away from this interview disappointed with Jinder Mahal. If anything, I will say I have a lot more respect for him now than I did before. That being said, I'm still predicting Nakamura to win at SummerSlam. We'll find out. Anyway, take care, guys. I hope you enjoyed the interviews. We'll have the full ones up in video form on YouTube in the next couple of days. So until then, be well, stay safe. I will see you tonight at the Barclays for SummerSlam and back here for episode 510 next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pants. And he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.